song is over, where have I been? Was it just a dream? Though your door is always open, where do I begin? May I please come in, dear?
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, April 20th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, for which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to be reading in the book of Romans. We did finish up on Mark last week, so we'll be starting on a new book. So we'll start with Romans. Today we're going to start reading from the book of Romans. We'll be reading chapter 1. The book of Romans reveals the mystery of salvation. Romans chapter 1. Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle, separate unto the gospel of God, which he had promised afore by his prophets in the Holy Scriptures, concerning his Son, Jesus Christ our Lord, which was made of the seed of David according to the flesh, and declared to be the Son of God with power according to the Spirit of holiness by the resurrection from the dead, by whom we have received grace and apostleship for obedience to the faith, among all nations for his name, among whom ye also are the called of Jesus Christ. To all that be in Rome, beloved of God, called to be saints, grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. First, I thank God through Jesus Christ for you all, that your faith be spoken of throughout the whole world. For God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers, making request, if by any means now at length I might have prosperous journey by the will of God to come unto you. For I long to see you, that I may impart unto you some spiritual gift, to the end you may be established. This is that I may be comforted together with you by the mutual faith both of you and me. Now, I would not have you ignorant, brethren, that oftentimes I purposed to come unto you, but was led hitherto, that I might have some fruit among you also, even as among the Gentiles. I am debtor both to the Greek and to barbarians, both to the wise and to the unwise. So as much as is in me, is I am ready to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome also. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation, to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. For therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who hold the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath shown it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because that, when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like unto corruptible man, into birds, and four-footed beasts, and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness, to the lust of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause God gave them up unto vile affection, for even their women did change natural use unto that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one towards another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of the error which was meet. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them up to a reprobate mind, to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, maligny, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. That was the book of Romans, chapter 1. Okay, tonight we're going to take a look at the IRS. We did file a paper on the 6th of April. This is the paper here that we filed. It was a quo warranto directed particularly at the IRS agents and the commissioner of the IRS, Charles P. Rettig. And anybody that wants to get a copy of this, you can find it up on our website underneath the grand jury. Click on Action Against the Judiciary. And on that page, you'll find lots of papers that we filed. The latest one that we filed, these particular papers right here is a series of paper bringing us to the end of our case, decision time. So that's when we started to file decisions in the court. First one was on August 17th, 2019. We filed a decision and order and a declaration to restore the law of the land. And we filed quite a few papers, as you can see, these particular dates. We've read some of these papers on our Monday night programs. But on the 6th of April, we reviewed the record, which we looked at last week, that paper. And tonight we're going to look at the paper of the IRS, which was a writ quo warranto, again directed particularly towards the IRS. The United States Supreme Court and the 94 federal district courts, and particularly and very specifically the Bar Association, is guilty of the problems that we have. But in any event, this particular paper was directed towards the IRS, and also, of course, we've copied all of the necessary parties. We'll get into that in a minute, but the key thing that we did, the United States Supreme Court, Federal Judiciary, the Senate, House of Representatives also. Okay, so we're going to look at this paper. Bear in mind, going back over to the page here, there are other papers here. We did do another paper, and I'm pretty sure we may not have looked at this paper in the future. We have a paper that is really a memorandum of law concerning tax courts. So anybody who wants further information beyond the paper we're going to look at tonight, you can click on that, and it focuses in on the problems of the courts, particularly the fact that they had no power or authority to create such a court. So that's what this memorandum pretty much focuses in on. Anybody can look at this. Now, on the IRS paper, which we filed on the 6th, as I mentioned, this particular paper, we're going to be looking at how would I say this? We're going to go down a rabbit hole a little bit in this paper. And what's kind of surprising is that it's so clear. Things are so clear in their own papers and that they have filed, the statutes that they have written, in the rules, in the processes. Everything they've done is so clear that they're doing it unlawfully, that they have no respect for the people, no respect for our Constitution, and they've trampled upon it, and they continue to trample upon it. But the Bar Association trains lawyers not to think but to respond. They are the minions of the New World Order. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind about that anymore. Really think it out. Lawyers run this entire nation. You get into a debate or a concern or a dispute with any elected, appointed, or even hired individual in any level of government, and the next thing you know, you got a lawyer in your face. They will not communicate with you. They will not answer. They will not allow themselves to be held liable to the lies and the things that they're doing and the things that they're preventing we, the people, from seeing or get access to. They just go on and on. I remember before they did this this new act that they had, I'm trying to think what the name of it was. I know Judiciary Watch is filing a lot of these things where they request. There's a certain act and they request certain information. You know, prior to that, they gave a lot of information without asking or having to write, you know, fill out a form and filing it and waiting for them to look at it and see if they got to redact something. And they know darn well most of the papers and things we look for don't need redacting. But it has gotten so bad. I know not long before I retired, they're trying to get some prints in a place, you know, in one of the government agencies, you know, the town hall, copy of certain prints of a particular structure that was being built, and I was involved with that particular project. And they've always given out those things, copies of maps or allow you to review these maps, but they wouldn't allow anymore to look at a map without filing this paper and waiting for the time. It's just a problem. And, of course, there's no reason for it. But the lawyers, they have been trained. Again, you know, you go to Washington, D.C., I mean, there's over 80,000 lawyers working in Washington, D.C. That tells you who's running this country, okay? The lawyers wrote pretty much all of the real law that's on the books. They're written by lawyers, bar attorneys. Not necessarily people who are even elected, even though a lot of them are bar attorneys, doesn't mean that they've written them. You know, you got to question who actually wrote these bills. Sometimes they'll address it to a particular congressman or someone who they never wrote this bill. There's a group of people who wrote these bills. So a lot of this stuff that they've written, particularly in USC 26, which really controls the process and the procedures and everything of the tax courts, the IRS. If you just read their papers, anything they send you, they're going to tell you by what authority they do it by. And in that process, if you look up the laws that they're quoting and actually go look them up, and you'll find that they have nothing to do with you. Sometimes you have to go two or three steps below that because you'll go into the law, it'll say those are reliable and this, that, and the other thing, and then there'll be a reference. And then you got to go dig into that one, and then there may be another reference, and you dig into that one. And at the bottom line of this whole thing, though, is that you'll discover that they're not talking about you and me; they're talking about something else. And lawyers, of course, you know, they don't dig into this to look. They're trained to respond in a certain way, and that's what they do. They get a tremendous amount of money for the work that they do, and they don't produce anything for it. The only thing they produce is things for the New World Order, ultimately, and maintain the status quo. Okay, so it's going to be kind of a little bit stepping into looking at some of the law, which I find, you know, the statutes and the codes, which I personally find very boring, puts me to sleep. But in any event, you know, I look down into these things to see if I can understand what they're talking about. And you could figure out their con job if you just take your time and go through it step by step. You know, we look at common law and our heritage, the words of our founding fathers, looking at it, the work that they produce, which was the three founding documents, all of those things are just fascinating and interesting. And, you know, but the law, man's law, shall I say, is boring, tedious, and bores me to tears ultimately. But in any event, let's take a look at this paper and then maybe we'll talk about it. Oh, one other thing, though, we have about 14 people. This paper that we filed on the 6th, there was quite a few affidavits that were attached to it. And this was done by the tribunal, we the people, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, the tribunal, which is we the people, the grand jury, on behalf of the affiants, which are attached to this particular paper. If you want to see, I think we have a copy of the affidavits. Not sure whether we actually posted them up on our line, but I think we did. If not, I will put them up there. But anybody who wants to attach to this particular case, they still can. There's still some time. We'll continue to take people on this thing until at least we get our first hearing, which will happen eventually. Only after, of course, the swamp is drained and those who are protecting and maintaining that status quo and protecting those who are in the courts maintaining the status quo, once they are removed, there's no place for them to hide and there's no more protection, and they're going to have to face all of the paperwork that we've put in and a lot of other things that a lot of other people have done. And they're going to have to give answers to this. So it's only a matter of time. We are truly a grassroots, you know, or ultimately an organization from the grassroots, because we are connected throughout the entire United States, all 50 states. We have people in probably at least a third of the counties of this nation. And there are 3,134 counties. We have probably more than a third of the counties covered, probably even half maybe. But in any event, the paper, we are a truly organic grand jury. I don't know that there's been an organic grand jury in 50 or 100 years. I really don't know. I have never seen one. Every grand jury I've seen or heard of, or any court case that had taken place, it's all been under civil law. So therefore, the grand jury are civil law grand juries. The trial juries are civil law trial juries. Nothing could be more less American than their courts. They have no concern for our unalienable rights. They'll give you their civil rights, and they'll decide who they'll give it to and who they won't. And I literally mean that. They literally do that in court. And it's just amazing what they do and say in these courtrooms. And I'm talking about judges. And get away with this. I mean, they should be arrested on the spot for subversion. But they get away with it. So anyway, let's look at this paper tonight and see where it goes. This is a writ filed in the United States District Court for the Northern District of New York. Copied is the President Trump and Attorney General William Barr. All attachments can be found at nationallibertyalliance.org. This is a writ quo warranto of we the people against the United States Supreme Court, the United States Senate, the United States House of Representatives, Federal Judiciary, all 94 federal districts, and Commissioner Charles P. Rittick, who have usurped their offices. Therefore, we are inquiring by what authority said defendants support their lawless actions stated herein, being a writ commanding the defendants to show by what warrant they exercise such a franchise, having never had any grant of it. This extraordinary writ quo warranto demands by what constitutional authority the IRS acts and claims to be a government agency, when in fact the IRS is a private corporation, a collection agency that just appeared on June 6, 1972 among the lists of government agencies without congressional authority, controlled by a board of directors and not the federal government. See Exhibits A and B, IRS Certificate of Corporation and the Cooper File, attached, as they give their allegiance to the Federal Reserve, which is a privately owned bank. See Exhibit C, attached. No one is above the law. Those who were protected are no longer protected. Justice is imminent. No one is above the law, so we ask. Number one, by what constitutional authority do the 94 federal district courts facilitate unconstitutional tax courts that give the appearance of a constitutional court? Two, by what constitutional authority do federal judges preside over these nisi prius de facto tax courts in jurisdictions unknown, giving the appearance of a lawful court? Three, by what constitutional authority does Congress legislate these repugnant unconstitutional statutes and codes, given the appearance of law? Four, by what constitutional authority does Congress legislate Title 26, having an appearance of law to enslave we the people? Five, by what constitutional authority does the IRS use SWAT to terrorize families for bogus debts? Six, by what constitutional authority does the IRS enforce a slave tax and imprison sovereign people? Seven, by what constitutional authority does the United States Supreme Court, via Rule 2, abrogate the law of the land and replace it with civil law? Eight, by what constitutional authority does the United States Supreme Court conceal access to courts of record? Nine, by what constitutional authority does the United States Supreme Court remain silent on these matters? For silence can only be equated with fraud, where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. Treason. The federal district court judges, the United States House of Representatives, United States Senate, and the United States Supreme Court, all orchestrated by the Bar Association, are partaking in a conspiracy to destroy our republic and enslave we the people. A conspiracy proven by the uniform actions of all 94 federal district courts acting in concert to aid and abet the enemy, both foreign and domestic, committing acts of terror and treason by facilitating the Federal Reserve, a private Gestapo, also known as the IRS. Although many defendants may not have directly participated in the original lawless legislation, the defendants continue to empower the Federal Reserve and the IRS when the defendants choose to uphold and support said acts of treason and not the U.S. Constitution. On May 10, 2013, the news reported that the IRS was cornered into apologizing for flagging Tea Party groups for a higher level of scrutiny than other organizations during the 2012 election. See Exhibit D. On June 6, 2016, after more than 3 years of stonewalling, the IRS released an almost complete list of organizations that the tax agency scrutinized in their Tea Party targeting scandal. The agency released the names of 426 organizations it targeted in a probe. The names of the additional 40 organizations were withheld because they have opted out of being part of the class action suit against the IRS. Why didn't the U.S. attorney file criminal charges against these subverts? Today, the IRS has broadened its evil scope in a vindictive act targeting the common law grand jury jurists that are investigating the IRS and many government officials for felonies, high crimes, and misdemeanors. This will not stand. Attached are affidavits from people being targeted. More to follow. Many more have been intimidated and have not added their affidavits because of fear of further retaliation by the IRS. The grand jury believes that the IRS agents have singled out members of the common law grand jury for political reasons and to prevent justice, with the intent to destroy lives, silence, and punish in violation of the following code. 18 U.S.C. subsection 1503, influencing or injuring officer or juror generally. Title U.S.C. 26 is not law. 26 U.S.C. 7806b establishes that Title 26 is not to infer, imply, or presume to be law, and therefore cannot have any legal effect because there exists no intent in law, and thereby the court cannot conclude the presumption in law by the grouping of any particular section or provision or portion of Title 26. Title 26 U.S.C. 7806b, no inference, implication, or presumption of legislative, that is, enactment of law, construction, shall be drawn or made by reason of the location or grouping of any particular section to provisions or portion of this title, nor shall any table of contents, table of cross-references, or similar outlines, analysis, or descriptive matter relating to the contents of this title be given any legal effect. The preceding sentence also applies to the side notes and ancillary tables contained in the various prints of this act before its enactment into law. The 16th Amendment does not authorize a tax on salary. The United States Supreme Court said, the 16th Amendment does not justify the taxation of a person or things previously immune. It was intended only to remove all occasion for any appointment of income taxes among the states. It does not authorize a tax on a salary. Income means gains, profit from property severed from capital, however invested or employed. Income is not a wage or compensation from any type of labor, and that Congress cannot, by any definition of income in this case, it may adopt, conclude the matter, since it cannot, by legislation, alter the Constitution from which it alone derives its power to legislate, and within whose limitations alone that power can be lawfully expressed. IRS has no enforcement over the people for failure to file. Subsection 7604, enforcement refers to a tax for commercial activities on fuels, alcohol, tobacco products, and firearms, not a tax on salaries. The IRS has no enforcement authority over the people. Wherever the IRS serves notice of enforcement or of summons to the people for income tax, they include a one-page form 2039, Notice Provisions of the IRS Code, see Exhibit E, attached, which states, 26 U.S.C. subsection 7604, enforcement of summons. Enforcement, whenever any person summoned under section 6420, 6421, and 6427 or 7602 neglects or refuses or to obey such summons or to produce books, papers, records, or other data or to give testimony as required, the Secretary may apply to the judge of the district court or to the United States Commissioner for the district within which the person is so summoned resides or is found for an attachment against him as for a contempt. Now, reference 6420 provides for enforcement for persons liable for tax on gasoline used in farming purposes, whereas 4081 references to 6420, which provides for the enforcement of summons for persons liable for tax on fuel, for removal, entry or sale from any refinery, terminal, or entry into the United States for consumption, use, or warehousing. 6421 reference provided for the enforcement of summons for persons liable for tax on gasoline for certain non-highway purposes by local transit systems or sold for certain exempt purposes. 6427 references provides for enforcement of summons for the sale of any fuel not used for taxable purposes for tobacco products and firearms under 27 CFR. 7602 references provides for enforcement of summons for the examination of books and witnesses for determining the liability of a person relating to tobacco products and cigarette papers and tubes. 4041 references provides for the imposition of tax on diesel fuels, kerosene, and certain liquids used as a fuel in aviation. 6601 references provides for the interest of underpayment, nonpayment, or extensions regulations for subsection 6001 that authorizes the collection of interest is under 27 CFR for alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. 6651 provides for penalties on underpayment, nonpayment, or extension regulations for 6651 that authorizes the collection of penalties under 26 CFR for alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. In conclusion, nowhere in subsection 7604, with all its legislative construction references, do we find enforcement of summons for persons liable for tax, being we the people. Therefore, persons required to answer a summons to file a return under subsection 7604 are: A. a person liable for tax, fuel, for removal of entry or sale for any refinery, terminal, and entry into the United States. B, a person liable for the tax consumption, use of, or warehousing, liable for taxes on gasoline used for farming purposes. C, a person liable for tax for diesel fuels, kerosenes, and certain liquids used as fuel in aviation. And D, a person liable for tax on alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Only the people participating in the aforesaid commercial activities are required to file a return for the collection of taxes. The IRS has no authority to ask people for information. Whenever the IRS serves notice to the people for income tax information, they include a one-page notice titled IRS Notice 609, see Exhibit F, which states that their legal right to ask is found in IRS Code Subsection 6001, 6011, and 6012, and their regulations, whereas 6001 states every person liable for any tax shall keep records, render statements, make returns, and comply with such rules and regulations as the Secretary from time to time prescribes. 6011 states that when required by regulations prescribed by the Secretary, any person made liable for any tax shall make a return or statement according to the forms and regulations prescribed by the Secretary. 6012 states persons required to make returns of income. The key phrase in subsection 6001, 6011, and 6012 is person liable or required, who would then be susceptible to enforcement under subsection 7604 if they do not comply. However, IRS enforcement refers to a tax for persons participating in the aforesaid commercial activities for fuel, for removal, entry, or sale from any refinery, terminal, or entry into the United States for consumption use or warehouse, liable for tax on gasoline used for farming purposes, for diesel fuels, kerosenes, and certain liquids used as fuel in aviation, and for alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Therefore, the IRS has no enforcement authority over the people because they are not liable to require to file a return or pay a tax on said commercial activities. Furthermore, it is in the Treasury regulations, which are not law, prescribed by the Secretary, where it fraudulently gives the appearance that taxpayers are we, the people, who are required to comply, when in fact they are not. The Treasury Secretary cannot make or add to law. Whereas the Supreme Court said, in construing Federal Reserve statutes, Supreme Court gives no weight to Treasury regulations which attempt to add to the statute something which is not there. In numerous cases where the IRS has sought enforcement of its summons pursuant to statutes, courts have held that a taxpayer may refuse productions of personal books and records by a certain of his privilege of right against self-incrimination. To penalize the failure to give a statement which is self-incriminatory is beyond the power of Congress. We the people can refuse to produce records to IRS agents. The United States Supreme Court has ruled, if the defendant, that's the people, had a subjective good faith belief, no matter how unreasonable, that he was not required to file a tax return, the government cannot establish that the defendant acted willfully. The Fifth Amendment applies alike to criminal and civil proceedings. The Fifth Amendment is not limited to testimony as in ordinarily understood, but extends to every means by which one may be compelled to produce information which may incriminate. Only the rare taxpayer would be likely to know that he could refuse to produce his records to Internal Revenue Service agents. Who would believe the ironic truth that cooperative taxpayers fares much worse than the individual who relies upon the constitutional rights? The United States Supreme Court also said, the requirements of an officer committed willfully is not met. Therefore, if a taxpayer has relied in the good faith upon prior decisions of this court, this willful qualifications fully protects one whose refusal is made in good faith and upon the grounds which entitles him to the judgments of the courts before obedience is compelled. There can be no sanction or penalty imposed upon one because of his exercise of a constitutional right. The Fifth Amendment. The IRS cannot seize property or access one of the people's financial institutions that are not commercially participating in the business of fuels, alcohol, tobacco products, and firearms. Therefore, the IRS has no enforcement authority over the people because they are not liable or required to file a return or pay a tax under 26 U.S.C. subsection 7604. The IRS cannot lawfully proceed against the people to seize property or access financial records without giving their victims due process in a court of law. Amendment 5 of the Constitution of the United States provides that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. A similar provision exists in all the states' constitutions. Due course of law. This phrase is synonymous with due process of law, or law of the land, and means law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice. No man shall be deprived of his property without being heard in his defense. The United States Supreme Court, in the case of Hale v. Henkel, said, "The individual may stand upon his constitutional rights as a citizen. He is entitled to carry on his private business in his own way. He has no duty to the state or to his neighbors to divulge his business or to open his doors to an investigation so far as it may tend to incriminate him. He owes no such duty to the state, since he receives nothing therefrom, beyond the protection of the life and property. This right are such as existed by law of the land long antecedent to the organization of the state, and in accordance with the Constitution. Among his rights are refusal to incriminate himself, and the immunity of himself, and his property from arrest or seizure, except under a warrant of the law. He owes nothing to the public so long as he does not trespass upon their rights. An individual may lawfully refuse to answer incriminating questions unless protected by an immunity statute." We are clearly of the opinion that no statute which leaves the party or the witness subject to prosecution after he answers the incriminating question put to him can have the effect of supplanting the privileges conferred by the Constitution of the United States. In view of the constitutional provision, a statutory enactment to be valid must afford absolute immunity against future prosecutions for the offense to which the question relates. The privileges of the Fifth Amendment is not limited to testimony as ordinarily understood, but extends to every means by which one may compel to produce information which may be incriminating. IRS notice of lien is a felony. Filing false and fraudulent documents violates Title 18 U.S.C. 1001. The IRS has the power as the collection agent for the alcohol, tobacco, and firearm. Since all of these provisions under 26 CFR were transferred to Title 27 CFR Part 70. Notice, in the Administrative Procedure Act, it was not necessary to publish this decision as it was a mere transfer within the Bureau of Internal Revenue as agents of the IRS can still collect for other agencies, but not for their agency itself. Please note the list of subjects in 27 CFR Part 70 that the IRS has authority to place a notice of lien or of levy upon. There you will find subjects listed, which also include government employees, law enforcement, and law enforcement officers. If you continue to read all the parts, you will not find the private man listed, as he is not in the list of subjects to which any notice of lien or notice of levy applies. One of the main and least understood problems is that the IRS has authority only over certain distinct class of people, which is those involved in alcohol, tobacco, and firearm manufacturing, government employees, law enforcement officers, and those private people who have a contract with any federal or state government to do business with these legal entities to actually place a notice of lien and not an actual lien, provided they follow the UCC procedures, meeting the three criteria stated below. This is found in the Federal Registry of Wednesday, November 14th, 1990, Volume 55, Number 220. Reveals proof of the only people the IRS has the authority to lien or levy upon. After a series of form letters are fraudulently sent to the IRS agents' victims, also known as one of the people, to intimidate them into participating or overwhelm them with threats that often paralyze many from responding to the intimidating letters and thereby claiming acquiesce to the IRS Gestapo, after which the IRS agents filed the dreaded notice of lien. It is at this point that the predatory IRS strikes their victim as they feel confident that they can get away with their felonies. The IRS knows that the overwhelming majority of the propagandized bar attorneys are too dumb to research the truth, and the few that do are intimidated and threatened by the judge in a backroom meeting where they are told, keep your mouth shut or face the wrath of the judge and the bar association. Notices of liens are being filed by IRS agents in violation of federal tax liens of 1966 public law. In conjunction with the legislative history, Senate Report Number 1708, which states in part at the very beginning of the Senate report, since the adoption of the federal income tax in 1913, the nature of commercial financial transactions has changed appreciably. In an attempt to take an account these charges, commercial transactions, and to secure greater uniformity among the several states. A uniform commercial code was promulgated somewhat over 10 years ago by the American Law Institute and the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws. This bill is in part an attempt to conform and the lien provisions of the Internal Revenue laws to the concept developed in this Uniform Commercial Code. It represents an effort to adjust the provisions in the Internal Revenue laws relating to the collection of taxes of delinquent persons to more recent developments in commercial practices, and to deal with a multitude of technical problems which have arisen over the past 50 years. Any lien filed by the Internal Revenue Service agents or officer must meet the Uniform Commercial Code practices hereinafter UCC in Section 9. Within Section 9, there are three criteria that have to be met when filing a notice of lien. If the three criteria are not met, there is a violation of the statute of law. Filing false and fraudulent documents violates Titles 18 U.S.C. 1001 and the various companion state laws. The Senate report and the public law listed above makes it clear the matter has to be contested in the state where the situs of the property lies, both real and personal property, as it does not lie in the venue of the United States, 28 U.S.C. 3002. The three requirement criteria are, number one, there must be a valid UCC-1 form filed upon which shows the alleged debtor's signature and the creditor's signature. Without these two signatures on this instrument, there is an invalid notice of lien filed. Number two, there must be a financing statement security agreement signed by the alleged debtor and the secured party, the IRS agent, as specified in Section 9-402 of the UCC. This financing statement is also mentioned in Section 9403 of the UCC. Without this, any notice of lien filed is invalid. Number three, there must be a valid court order based on a court judgment wherein the alleged debtor has or had due process opportunity to contest the alleged debt. Without this instrument and due process, there is no lawful authority and the notice of lien is invalid. Lack of any one of the above is sufficient cause for the recording officer to immediately reject any attempt to file a notice of lien by any IRS agent. There is no actual lien placed upon any debtor until a court hearing and due process is afforded. Otherwise, it is an attempt of taking property in violation of the Fifth Amendment, as stated in 26 CFR Part 600. This means that the IRS agent must produce the supporting document adopted by the Congress to allow the IRS to file when filing a notice of lien under UCC. This is to prove the validity of the notice of lien, because the alleged debtor signature must be on the document. A mere statement, even certified, that the alleged debtor owes a certain amount is not sufficient to overcome the requisite of the UCC and the public law mentioned, much less the requirements due process. IRS agents never file the aforesaid valid UCC-1 form, financing statement, security agreement, and a valid court order in the appropriate federal district court and with the county clerk for a lawful lien and its collection. Furthermore, proof of claim, affidavit form 4490, must be filed in order to start a tax claim against one of the people, but IRS agents never do, because that would be another crime. See Exhibit H, Form 4490. Additionally, in order for IRS agents to file a return for their victim or access their victim's financial records, Form 56, a fiduciary authority administrated by a court, must be filed in the appropriate federal district court. And this, too, is never filed. See Exhibit G, IRS Form 56. Therefore, IRS agents commit another crime when they break an entry into a victim's financial institution without the fiduciary authority. IRS agents, with their filing of a fake notice of lien with the county clerk, causes the clerk and the sheriff, who will execute the collection to satisfy the lien, to participate in their crime. Income tax is a direct tax forbidden under the Constitution. We the people, via Article 3, Section 1, vested one Supreme Court with the judicial power to all cases in law and equity. We vested Congress with power to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court via Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8. Whereas Congress legislated 28 U.S.C. Subsection 132, creating 94 federal district courts, we gave authority to Congress to make law under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18. The Constitution gave no authority to Congress to legislate a direct tax or create a tax courts. Income tax is a direct tax. We the people clearly deny a direct tax via Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4, where we said no captation or other direct tax shall be laid. Enforcement of a direct tax is a slave tax, therefore an act of treason. Federal judges maintain status quo over the Constitution, an act of treason. Federal judges owe allegiance to the United States, but instead they adhere to the enemies of liberty, giving them aid and comfort within the United States, and thereby have levied war against we the people, an act of treason, under 18 U.S.C. Code, subsection 2381. In Olmstead versus the United States Supreme Court said, decency, security, and liberty alike demand that government officials shall be subject to the same rules of conduct that are the commands to the citizens. In a government of laws, existence of the government will be imperiled if it fails to observe the law scrupulously. Our government is the potent and omnipresent teacher. For good or for ill, it teaches the whole people by its example. Crime is contagious. If the government becomes a lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for law. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. It invites anarchy. To declare that, in the administration of the criminal law, the ends justify the means, to declare that the government may commit crimes in order to secure the conviction of a private criminal, would bring terrible retribution. Against that pernicious doctrine, this court should resolutely set its face. Every bar-taught judge in America that upholds and supports Rule 2, which claims to change the laws of the land to the repugnant civil laws, thereby abrogating Article 3, Section 2, and Article 6, Clause 2, is guilty of treason. And because this is taught and believed by all judges, proves a conspiracy to subvert our republic in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 2383, which states, whoever incites, sets on foot, assists, or engages in any rebellion or insurrection against the authority of the United States or the laws thereof, or gives aid or comfort thereto, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned, not more than 10 years or both, and shall be incapable of holding any office under the United States. The tribunal orders that the United States Supreme Court is to repeal Rule 2 immediately. Immediately order via writ mandamus all federal judges to honor their oaths and support and uphold the law of the land. Immediately order via writ mandamus all federal judges to cease their concealment of natural law courts, also known as courts of record. Immediately order all federal judges to provide access to natural law courts without charge. Immediately order via writ mandamus all federal judges to shut down illegal IRS tax courts hearings and order the release of all unlawfully prosecuted and imprisoned people in tax courts. The tribunal orders IRS Commissioner Charles P. Rettig as follows. Order IRS agents to honor their oath. Order IRS agents to follow Title USC 26 and 27 CFR inasmuch as it is lawful. Order IRS agents to stop harassing people who are not liable under 27 CFR Part 70. Cease and desist the use of paper terrorism against we the people for debts that they did not incur. Cease and desist the use of Gestapo SWAT on non-violent people for debts that they did not incur. And restore all employees who have attached their affidavits to this extraordinary writ to their original state before they were victimized. Compensatory damages to all injured parties who have attached their affidavits to this extraordinary writ in the amount of $1,000 face value constitutional money. We, the tribunal, via the common law grand jury, are resolute in that if the IRS defendants continue their unlawful notice of liens, unlawful use of SWAT, unlawful tax courts against the people, unlawful property seizure, unlawful civil law, indictments and unlawful arrests and harassments, they will be met with indictments. We, the tribunal, via the common law grand jury, are resolute in that if federal judges continue their unlawful IRS tax hearings against the people, continue under Rule 2, and continue the concealment of natural law courts, and charge money for justice, they will be met with indictments. Justice will prevail, our indictments will be honored, and our warrants will be executed. Transparency of government and law and order must prevail in order to save the only one true lawful republic. No one is above the law. A partial truth is no truth at all. A partial law is no law at all. And a partial right is no right at all. We the people's time has come. It is so ordered. Signed, Grand Jury, Albany, New York, April 6, 2020, sealed. Okay, that brings us to the end of that paper. And again, we do have another paper, as I mentioned earlier, and you can find these papers right here on this page. Again, to get to this page, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight grand jury, come down to action against the judiciary, click that, and you'll find our papers. All of these papers really have some power to it. It is all written in light of common law and our founding documents and the words of our founding fathers and many United States Supreme Court rulings of the past when we had just judges. We've had some, of course, even in today's time, from time to time. We lost one some years back, Scalia, who wrote the paper on United States versus Williams. He wrote the majority decision, and that was a very powerful paper, and it's exactly what we use to empower ourselves. Not that we need that paper to empower us, but it certainly helps because it does make it clear for those people who claim to be justices that are not just at all and are no justices at all, and they're tyrants is who they are. But in any event, there is a lot of stuff out there that we can use. I've had some interesting results with some of these things in the past and even presently. But anyway, We're going to move on. So again, this paper we read was the IRS writ quo warranto right here that was filed on April 6th. Click that link. It'll open up. And then the other paper that is very interesting, and I think we did read this in the past sometime, is Memorandum of Tax Courts. As a matter of fact, if we go to, let's see, what is that page? I guess we're on the right page here. Let's go over to, I think we could find it real quick. We'll just take a quick look anyway. On a weekly call here. Okay, every call that we've had since we've started, and actually before we became National Liberty Alliance, we had other names we went by until we eventually morphed into National Liberty Alliance. Here's a copy of all of our programs that are downloadable. Okay, what you have to do is right-click any audio you want, and then click Save Link As to your computer, whatever folder. And then you'll just go click that link, and it'll be on your computer. You'll have a copy. You can put it on your MP3 players or whatever you want to do. But in here somewhere, I believe we did cover the tax paper that we were talking about. I'm looking real quick to see if I can see it. I thought it was something we did recently. So anyway, you might find it in here. I'm not seeing it at the moment, but you do have the paper, and that's the key. Okay, with that, we'll get moving on. Jen, do we have any announcements or do we have any questions?
We have about four or five questions tonight, John.
Okay, you're coming in kind of low. Is anybody else hearing Jen low or is it just me? Hey, maybe it's just me. Jen.
No comments. Just a note for the future, John, on your broadcaster there for the document. It was scratchy and overloaded quite a bit.
On the reading of that?
On when you ran the broadcaster for the document, okay?
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that. I really don't. They've gotten worse. This is supposed to be high def. You know, so much for high definition. You know?
I think Jan is very low also, by the way. I'm just telling you. I can barely hear him.
Yeah, I did hear some scratches on that. Every couple of lines, it was like a scratch on it, and again, I don't know why. They don't have solutions. I've called them 5 times. They've never returned my calls. But I am a pain in the neck to them, so maybe they don't want it to return my calls. So I don't know.
Now, the Bible reading was very low. I can hardly make it out.
But okay.
The broadcast for the IRS document was very loud by comparison.
All right, I'll try to fix that if I can. If it's too low, people can raise their volume and then lower it when the next section comes up. So we'll try to see if we can work that problem out, but maybe that's what we'll need to do until we can fix that problem. The scratchy part, maybe I was too high on the recording for that, on the part that's scratchy. So maybe lowering the mic a little bit might help that, but we'll see what happens. But on the regular recording, it was clear as crystal. Uploading it and putting it through the processor here and the broadcaster, it did what it did. So, all right, anyway, questions. Do we have any questions come in, written
yes,
questions?
How
many do we have?
About 5, I guess it is. They're short, shouldn't take long.
Okay.
First question. I am one of the plaintiffs moving this case to federal court. I heard the Supreme Court will only hear a case if the settlement amount exceeds $400,000. How many plaintiffs in total are on this case?
Now, I guess they're talking about, well, we got quite a few people who have moved into this case, but what they just read or said is not true. None of that is true. The only thing that gets you into a federal court is a constitutional issue. Okay, anything under the law... under law and equity, well, under law ultimately, but even in, I mean, under law equity, but even under law, if your constitutional, or shall I say, an unalienable right protected by your constitution is violated, then that is a cause under law to move into a federal court for cause, which should be a summary proceeding, and the decision should always be made for the person moving into the court because they clearly will lay out the fact that. They're not getting their due process or whatever that violation is, which is almost, well, it's always in our case, due process. They're not giving us due process. So, but there is no number or anything of that nature concerning to in order to get into a federal court or to anything like that. So I don't know what they're talking about on that. It doesn't exist. Maybe, you know, that kind of a question, if someone has that, maybe you can come live onto a program one evening and we can get into more exchange and we can try to understand the question better and be more specific. But the Constitution is clear as far as, you know, it being a violation under the Constitution. What's the next question?
Is there any way to stop all of these unconstitutional shutdowns and lockdowns to go through the people using common law?
We're talking about, I guess, the events today with some of these crazy governors doing all these stupid things. I presume that's what he's talking about. What, do you think that's what he's talking about?
Well, he wants to know how to stop it by using common law. Is there any
way? Well, that's what we're doing. We're filing papers in the court. They're ignoring it, and they'll continue to ignore it. Some of them aren't ignoring it. You know, there are a couple of people here or there, a clerk here and a judge there that does the right thing for whatever purposes. I don't think it's because he enjoys justice. I think maybe because of fear. But maybe hopefully it is because they do enjoy justice. Again, you know, to get something through, we can file papers, but they're not going to listen until we get to the other side. When the people take back the courts, look at anybody who thinks that the United States Supreme Court, any of the federal district courts, any of the state courts, any of the county courts, town, villages, and city courts, if you think that you're going to go into any of those courts and stand on your unalienable rights protected by the Constitution, and they're going to acknowledge that, and you're going to get your due process and, you know, your due return to your whatever it is you're requesting, well, I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you, because the Constitution is not viable in any of these courts. They have civil law in these courts. The law of the land is not in these courts any longer. And it hasn't been since about 1938. It was 1934. The Enabling Act of 1934 gave the power and the authority to the United States Supreme Court to write rules. They passed that off to the Bar Association. That is completely obvious. Matter of fact, it was the Bar Association that set that stage to get Congress to put that out, to get it into the courts, and for the federal, and for the people who taught these Supreme Court judges, the people who taught all of these bar attorneys, these people, and not all of them. You know, remember, there are some good lawyers that they've come and realized the truth. There are lawyers that haven't gone through the bar process, although they did take the bar test. But they didn't go through a bar school. So you do have some out there, but there's not much that they can do, because they'll be beaten and whipped worse than us, because they're coming into the courts practicing law, and that judge in the bar is going to just whack the heck out of those people. But anyway, you're not getting it. They are under civil law. Rule 2 brought them into civil law. And under civil law is a municipality law. It's the law of the city. It's there to control the people, to keep you under thumb, to make sure that they have control over you, to make as much money as they can off of you, to license every right and everything that they can think of, tax you here and tax you there and tax you here and tax. There's a song out by the Beatles quite some time ago, The Tax Man, if anybody remembers that. Now, go listen to that song, because it lays that out pretty obviously. So anyway. The only thing we can do is continue doing what we're doing. We're beating down their door. We're taking a nail and a paper that we just wrote here, and we're nailing it to their door. And we're nailing a paper after paper after paper after paper. We're exposing their sins. We're exposing their tyranny. We're exposing them, that they are destroying our republic and doing it knowingly. Okay, they know. Now, it may be true, like Scalia, stuck between a rock and a hard place, but even Scalia came out with things here and there would help the people. Look, in the United States versus Williams case, where Anton Scalia wrote for the majority, and he wrote a beautiful, beautiful paper that empowered what we are doing today. He wrote the roadmap for us to use. He pulled together, the rulings of the past that what the United States Supreme Court has held and ruled since the beginning of our nation concerning the grand jury, the power and the authority of the grand jury, the authority and the power to bring themselves together, to control they have no outside, no one on the outside is to affect their thinking, their concerns, their decisions or anything. A judge is not to stick their nose into the business of the grand jury. The prosecutor is not to tell the jury what to do, although they do. They're getting away with it. Why? Because we, the people, are ignorant. You know, as Jefferson has said, we quote this all the time, it's on our front page, the people expect to be ignorant and free. They expect what never was and never will be. Forget about it. You're not going to have liberty and you're not going to have freedom until you understand what your liberty is, where it comes from, and how powerful you can be with the knowledge of it. And the more people that become aware of it, that becomes one more nail in their coffin. Because at some point in time, critical mass will be met. The swamp will be drained. The swamp creatures will be brought to justice, and these judges will be sitting there with no protection, and we will overtake them, and we will put them in jail, because that's where they belong. They put so many people in jail, they need to go to jail. So we will, with these indictments, will be at some point in time fulfilled. But again, if you're going to think you're getting any justice on this side of things, it's slim and far and in between. Takes a lot of diligence, careful studying and writing of your papers, and really catching them to a point where they're so exposed that they just want this court case out of that court. Only then you'll be met with at least half justice. They'll let you go. They'll forget the fine. They'll not imprison you. They'll close the case. But they will never acknowledge or allow you to win that case, because that case would be used, as they call, a precedence. You know, precedence in common law is irrelevant. I mean, to some degree, it plays a role. A lot of cases in the past really plays a role to positions, ideas, to American jurisprudence. It plays a role to give the meaning of words and phrases, all these things. So we use these U.S. Supreme Court rulings for that purpose. But also, the United States Supreme Court is their boss. It's the boss of the federal district courts, and it's the boss of all of the courts, okay? And this United States Supreme Court that sits now, these nine individuals that are sitting there as the United States Supreme Court, they have no choice but to be silent. What can they do? What can they do? Can they agree with us now? I think it's too dangerous for them. At least they feel it is. Will they agree with us after the swamp is met? I certainly hope so, because if they don't, we the people have no choice but to really think hard and decide on whether we're going to indict those individuals or not. Because either that, or we're just going to give up our liberty. But it begins with knowledge. Jefferson said, inform the people, educate the people. Look at this thing that's going on with this virus that we got going on right now. Let's take that for an example. You got these governors are acting like Nazis. I mean, these people are crazy. They're insane. They need to be removed from office. I hope Barr goes out after them. They need to be arrested, okay? Explain to the people. Look what the people are doing on their own. They have judgment to figure out what has to be done. Educate the people, inform the people, and they will do the right thing. They will respond correctly. Same thing with our government. Educate the people, inform the people. What is your heritage? What is natural law? What are the maxims of law? What are the rules of common law? What is this rule too? What are these rules of the court that they've used to create the civil law? Unless we, the people, understand these things, we are just lambs ready for the slaughter. It's that simple, because you don't have a chance. Knowledge is power, and when you have that knowledge, you have to execute that knowledge, and then we really have power. And that's what we're doing here with National Liberty Alliance. That's what the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is doing right now, is putting these papers and posting them everywhere. We're nailing them to the doors of the United States Supreme Court. We're serving it on all 94 federal district courts. All 94 federal district courts. We're serving it on both houses of Congress. We're copying Attorney General Barr. Before that, we were copying Sessions. We're copying the President of the United States. So, and we're posting it all up on our website, and of course, we're filing it up here in the Northern District of New York, the United States Federal District Court of New York, the Northern District of New York. So we're filing it up there. It's everywhere. It's out on the website. We posted two papers on YouTube over the weekend, or last week, I think it was, maybe Thursday or Friday. We posted the NLA, Introduction to NLA. It was about a 50-minute video. Anybody would like to see that video, by the way? Let me see if I can get that here. Let's see. Anybody who would like to see this video, okay, you can go to People's Duty, Organizing Your County, which everyone should be reading this page because you should be organizing your county. We need to take this nation back. We need to take our states back. We need to take our liberty back. And if you fail to do it, then we'll fail. Then we deserve everything we get. But we put up on YouTube two papers, okay, two YouTube, what would you call it, PowerPoint videos, what we did. One was Introduction to National Liberty Alliance, and the other one was Action at Law Recapping the Record. Those are the two papers we filed Thursday. Over the weekend, I was going up to the YouTube. I was actually trying to get into, really go to YouTube just to watch some videos, and I was signed out of my account, and it refused to allow me to get back into my account. They shut our account down over the weekend just after posting those two videos. Go see what those two videos are. We don't have any music on those videos. We don't have any news media or anything. We don't have any this is just us, we the people, those people from National Liberty Alliance, particularly me reading this, and all the words written, the papers that we filed in the federal district court, and also an Introduction to National Liberty Alliance. There's nothing there that they can say that we violated some copyright code or something like that. But anyway, you can see these videos. Here's one of them, okay? I'm not going to play it, but it's just a little bit of it. Okay, then there's another one. This is Action at Law Recapping the Record. You can download these, by the way, and onto your own computer, okay? And this is Recapping the Record, which is a paper that we filed on April 6th, the same day that we filed the paper that we read today. So we filed all those papers today. But those videos were not up there, 4 days before they shut that account down. So, but we're not going to count on YouTube to get us through. We're going to count on the people that are coming to this meeting, the people that are participating with National Liberty Alliance, the people who are the grassroots creating the necessary getting the necessary education and knowledge so that they can take control in the grassroots and be people with consent of the government, where you, the people, consent to their government. But it's up to the people to do this. But nevertheless, this is what we have to deal with, and we'll continue to deal with it until we get to the other side of things, and the other side of things is a drained swamp. But just going back real quick, looking into the Constitution article, I think it's 3, actually. This is Executive 2-3, Judicial Power, okay? Here it is. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States and the treaties made thereof, and so on and so forth. So, the only requirement to get into a federal court is it has to be an issue arising under this Constitution. So if you have a Bill of Rights issue, which is an unalienable right issue, you have access into the Supreme Court. And it is their duty. It is their job. There's no question here. There's nothing to be thought about, nothing to be argued, nothing to be decided. Only the facts need to be laid in front of the federal district court judge to say, this is what was done, this is what they do, this is what they denied, we want protection, and we want judgment. And he must Not, it's not like he'd like to do it. No, he must do it. But they don't. And they won't. Because they're maintaining status quo. Because we, the people, are too dumb to know. We're too ignorant. We don't know. And I speak to myself first. We don't know. We don't understand these things. I decided to understand these things. I am no longer ignorant to these things. I understand what they're doing, and I'm doing everything I can to stop them from doing it. You, everyone has to do the same thing. We have to, we the people have to come united. United we stand, and divided we shall fall. All right, next question. Jen, did I put you to sleep?
I have been in touch with the director of the Board of Elections in my district. She has never heard of a committee man. Is there a document on National Liberty website that I could print off and take it to her to explain what a committee man is and further enhance my position to get on the ballot?
No, nothing you could do from that perspective. Can you get your name on the ballot? We can get you elected. We can teach you how to become elected. It starts with taking our courses, taking the course of our government by consent course, the most important course that we put together, although we've got three or four courses up there. We have the militia course. We have the civics course. We have this course. So we have those three courses. And I think I think Ron put a foundational study together also, so that's kind of another course. Plus, you could just go through the website yourself and read through it and start with our papers or start anywhere you want, okay? So that's where you got to start is there. And but the key thing here is going to the website. Let me shut some of these things down so I don't get confused all the time. Okay, go on our website here. And coming to the place, organizing your county. And that's where it starts. These videos that we're going to be putting up here are all downloadable videos. They're MP4s. And we're going to have about 30 videos up here. And these are the videos that will educate you. We'll have a video up here which lays out exactly how to fill out the paperwork. If you're going to go to the Board of Election and talk to them, we can give you the answers of what to tell them. You're going to only upset them more, and they're going to resist you even more, and they'll even watch out for you to try to do whatever they can to destroy your paperwork or cast you out or do whatever they can to get you away because they don't want you there. You know, you got to understand the people in the Board of Election, working in the Board of Election, if you want to, here in New York, and it's probably the same thing in every state, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, here in New York, if you want to find out who the state committee men are, that's the people on the top, that actually make all the higher decisions, which really they don't make anyway because someone above them tells them what to think and do. But nevertheless, those people actually work at the Board of Elections. They're the ones that are sitting in those state committee positions. And they should not be because the state committee positions should be held by the county chairs. In my state, we have 62 counties. So we have 62 chairmen, one for each county. Those 62 chairmen is the state committee. They're the ones that go up once or twice a year, a couple of times, every 2 years. Whenever a senator's running or whenever the governor's running is the time that they go up and meet on the state level, with the exception of once a year they have a rally type thing and, you know, all that stuff. But in any event, those are the people that's supposed to be making the decisions and bringing the will of the other members in their county. Because remember, they're the chairman in their county working with other people, and you work things out, who you're going to support, what you're going to do, and you bring those issues up to the state level. Well, that's not the way it's working. So you're not going to get that individual might very well be a state committee person. And that being the case, if they start to understand what you're doing, they're going to do everything to shut you down because they don't want to lose that position. But we will teach you how to do it step by step. We will give you the paperwork. We'll tell you how to go about getting what needs to be done, how to get them to take your paperwork. We will give you step by step. That is in creation right now. A lot of this, some of this information is already up there. Okay, for instance, you can go to organizing your county, for instance, underneath people's duty, you come down to become a committee man. Read that. Okay? You continue down and you how to committee man petition process works. You can go there. I wonder if this is still up there. Hold on a minute. Now, there is an error on this video. This video was put together, the guy that taught us here in New York, Lenny Roberto. And he gives a very good presentation and lays out on how fill out the designating petition and to look for a lot of the traps that they try to get you to kick you out of the whole process and all this other stuff. But there is an error that he's made. He did not know that there was actually they were running straw men, and the straw men were being elected, and anybody who was running properly and became elected committeeman was really put underneath the wing or the control of the straw men that are party animals, party people, whether it's the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. Okay, but he didn't know, because I remember when I first brought it to his attention, because Gerard and I went up to Albany to study the law and look into the archives to find out what we can find out. And then we went and talked with Lenny about this, and we said, what is member of the county committee? What is that? He said, I have no clue. He said, that's nothing. It means anything, nothing. Well, I said, well, these people are running as member of the county committee. He says, nah, they're not running. They're committee. And he looked, he saw some paper, but he never really came to a solution or a conclusion. Maybe he hasn't, I just don't know. Okay? Point was, it's all straw men. They're not elected. They're elected by party meetings. The whole thing's a fraud. And the legislators back in the early 1900s, at the turn of the century here, between I think 1909 and 1911 is when the major changes took place, and they put in the straw man, and they buried the elected man. But the elected man is still there. He's there for numerous reasons, even if he's not in the law, but he is in the law. But even if he's not in the law, this is an unalienable right, the right of consent of our government. How much more? Who do you think should be controlling who gets on the ballot or not? Well, right now, these parties do. And the parties, they fulfill the will of those people above them and so on, right up to the powers that be, the New World Order. They decide who's going on the ballot. So we have a choice. We got the criminal on the right, or we got the criminal on the left. You choose. Go ahead. We're gonna allow you to be free to have a democratic process. Go ahead and vote. They don't care who gets elected, unless a Trump gets in there somehow, or a Kennedy, or a Reagan. Reagan, they took him out real early, and he didn't really understand what was really going on. Trump at least does. He knows the game. He knows about 9/11. He knows what took place. He knows what's going on in the Middle East. He knows all of the China stuff. He's been dabbling around in all this stuff for a long time, seeing these people and dealing with these people and understanding the evils that they participate in that he never did, thank God. So anyway, the one thing that this guy, Lenny Roberto, made a mistake on in this petition process, and we're going to be working to extract it out of the video, is he tells you, take your petition, go down to the Board of Election, get the person who filled the office that you're running for this year, get a past position, look at their paperwork, and then make sure you do everything the way they did it. Nothing could be further from the truth on that one. He is absolutely dead wrong, and we're going to pull that out of the video so people don't go down. If you want advice, once you learn what we've taught you on paper and in videos and even what you teach yourself at meetings, and you want advice, you can come here to a Monday night meeting and be very specific with questions after you have certain knowledge, prerequisitional understandings. Then you can come and ask the question, you know, I didn't understand this, or how does this work, or what happens if this happens, or what should we do here because we got stuck over there. We'll do our best. We will answer your question, and if we can't answer your question, we will find the answer before the next meeting. So, all right, next question.
Is NLA familiar with the two vaccine courts, one in Los Angeles and another in Atlanta?
Yeah, I have no idea what a vaccine court is. It sounds like it's got to be administrative to begin with, whatever
I know what it is, and I know the game. I'm very familiar with them. I mean, what does he want to know about them? They're set up by the government. The vaccine companies were offered immunity, complete immunity, to put these vaccines out.
Maybe under civil law, though. Remember, not under common law.
They made a statute for compulsory vaccinations, and they relieved them from any liability so that they could pull these profits out without having to worry about anything. But they set up a court that is an administrative court that awards for vaccine injury. And they've paid out not millions of dollars, but billions, and that's still only 1% of the debts and the problems that they have. So it's a big scam. You know what I mean? It was something that was put there to shut the people up. So there are two vaccine courts, and when you go to vaccine court, you're the defendant, and guess who's defending the vaccine? The Attorney General of the United States. So it's a setup. He's supposed to be defending us, not some corporation that, you know, who the government's standing in the
way. So the U.S. attorneys actually represent them, huh?
Yep.
Wow.
So, yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah. So look, I have a in-law whose daughter died, and they sued, and they did get money. They did win in the vaccine court, but it's very unusual. Most people don't even know that they exist, much less, you know, to go through the process. Plus, they throw a lot of it out. You know what I mean? You know what a statutory administrative court is, and basically that's what they are. So, you know, the standards they hold for you to prove that, I mean, some of it's just so blatant, you know, that you can't disprove it. You know what I mean? It's the ones that are really, like, really, really bad, they pay off. And, of course, you know, if they pay you off, they're going to give you a gag order that you can't talk about it and all that baloney, you know? So, yeah, I'm familiar with the vaccine courts, and they need to get rid of them. They need to just give us our Constitution back.
Well, they're administrative, so, yeah, they got to go, because unless you agree, and who in their right mind would agree, I'd rather go to a common law court where the people decide.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So. And, John, I just wanted to add, you talked about, did those videos get, did those channels that you put the YouTube video on, did they restore them yet, or no?
No, they're gone. They won't even answer me. I've already emailed them in. They want to know, what violation did you do to make us take, and how do I know what they're even talking about? You know, I was talking with Carl about it. Maybe Carl can try to figure this up. They're not answering. We've lost National Liberty Alliance YouTube channel. It's gone. And I'm thinking of suing, if we can find the time. I got too many other things to do, but maybe we will.
There is a process to go through with them.
Not anymore. No. No, that process used to be, because I've been here before. I've lost my channel many times, and I've gotten my channel back a lot of times, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a process. You used to click on, you go through it, and you go from one step to another. They ask you, and once you send it in, immediately my site was turned back on, and it never came and bothered me again. Okay, although they did at another time for another issue and three strikes and you're totally out and then they take your site down forever and blah, 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 blah. But anyway, this was the first issue, and there was one form. We sent it in. It was a little different. It wasn't as robust as the other form that I used to see, you know, a couple of years back. So it's not robust in a certain way. And they want to know what violation I had done. And what I'm, I don't know how they're even asking it. How am I going to fix that? I don't even know what the problem is. All of that is totally unique. My stuff I created, actually, personally. Nothing there comes from anyone else.
It's not always copyright violations. It could be against their community standards, whatever that
is. Well,
You know, Amazing Polly, she's very good. And they took one of her videos down, and they said it was too graphic. Now, you would think that that's like pornography, no? She puts graphs up, drawing lines like between Fauci and Clinton and the World Health Organization and all these people. She has graphs, and they said it was too graphic. Can you imagine? I mean, they're absolutely ridiculous. So I look at...
What I think I'm going to do is I'm going to maybe write a short paper, add it in to this lawsuit we have going, give them, do a, I don't know, maybe a mandamus or something, and let it be known that they took down the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury's instructional videos.
Yeah, I think we should do a personal lawsuit against them, but anyway.
Well, yeah, that too. We'll put in some, you know, I always put $1,000 real money, and I defined it as Morgan dollars. Morgan dollars right now, I think, are $24 a piece. So that's $24,000 in today's money. I mean, $24,000. So that's $24,000 in today's money. When he makes the switch over and goes over to the silver certificate or whatever they're going to do, he's probably going to do what Kennedy did and come out with the silver certificate.
I think
and the value of the dollar will continue to get worse and worse, and the silver certificate will come in with its full strength probably. But that dollar is going to deteriorate more and more as time goes on. So if you go to the store and buy an item for $3, let's say, and you use the Federal Reserve dollar that's floating around, you're going to pay the $3. But if you go in with your silver certificate, your dimes and quarters, silver dimes, silver quarters, and silver half dollars and dollars, you might pay a dime, literally. I've got receipts for bills that my mother got back in the 50s from a lawyer for doing some work for her. And the bill came out and did all this work, and it was like $9.32, $2.20. I mean, it was nothing, okay? Of course, money had a lot more value, you know? I mean, a dollar was worth a dollar. He's going to make it a very comfortable, it looks like he's going to make it a very comfortable exchange, a very slow exchange. Going to happen kind of quickly, but we're not going to have a crash is the point. So if you've got silver dollars today, okay, you can buy a bag of dimes, $100 face value of dimes, quarters, half dollars. You can get that for about $1,500, okay, which is about $15 per coin, per dollar, you know, silver dollar. And remember, even though that's 90% silver, got some copper in it, so it's got a little more value than that. At least on the melt rate, which you can't melt because that's real money. You can't, it's against the law to melt that. Also, the law says that the banks have to honor face value on something like that. So that dollar is literally a full dollar. That silver dollar is literally a full silver dollar. And you go get yourself a round, a silver round, for instance, that's not a legal tender, it's not American coin, the U.S. dollar, that coin has the value of the weight of ounce of silver, where the 90% ounce of a silver dollar, which is 90% silver, has the full value of 100%. So the best money right now for anyone to do is to buy silver, because when he makes that flip, $1,000, which is $24,000 today, is going to be, God knows where it's going to go. It's 90-1 ratio, maybe 100-1 ratio right now, when it should be 18-1. So you work out the math right there. You know, it's seven times, six times the value of 15. What did we say? 15. Let's see. $1,000 is Morgan is $24,000. So 15 times 24,000, or 10 times 24,000, it's $240,000. Okay, in real time, when everything is adjusted and goes back, you know, we have a paper up on our website. I'll see when I'm listening to something else. I'll go search it out and put it up there. And it's the value of a dollar, and what the dollar truly was when our founding fathers were, what they paid for, you know, a loaf of bread or a piece of meat, and the value relationship between an ounce of gold and an ounce of silver. You know, it took $18.94 back in the days of George Washington. Took $18.94 in silver to make 1 ounce of gold. Okay, and in 1908, 1910, before 1913, or 1960, I think it was 1913. In any event, the early part of 1900s, it was still $18.94. For 100 years, that number only flexed one penny, one time, okay? And so that tells you the power of that money. And we need to get back to real money. I believe Trump is going to be making that move. I'm kind of surprised he's making it so early. He may make it before his election. I look at the next question.
Everything's accelerated. Look at the point I wanted to bring up with the videos and stuff. Our members need to be sharing those videos. You see, it's up to the digital warriors. The reason we're as far ahead as we are is because of all this alternative news. You know, Fauci just got caught, and the woman there with him, giving all this money to the World Health Organization. And after they put a moratorium on experimenting on these bio weapons, Fauci sent $3.7 million to that lab in China and funded them making this. That whole group, it's Clinton, it's Bill Gates, and it's the World Health Organization and the National Institute of Health all together in a big circle, and they just got caught today. The videos are online. Go look at them. And the reason they got caught, because you got a couple of doctors that have been screaming about it, and everybody shared the videos. The only real news out there today is the digital news that we the people are putting out. And we got 8,000 members. Those videos should be viral. And look, I don't know if you can put a video up that doesn't use YouTube to show. Like, any video that's on our website, does that necessarily go through YouTube, John?
And if we got a lot of videos on our website that goes through YouTube. Yeah.
Well, we gotta start doing some of them on Vimeo or something and putting them on the website so that our members can take the URL. And pass the URL through Facebook and that.
Well, one of the things we did do, if you go to our welcome page, for instance, let's see, this is where we had the video, which was, what was the name of that? Introduction to National Liberty Alliance. Mm-hmm. So it was here on the front page, okay? So what I did is I just put the name here. Click here for video introduction to NLA, and if you click on that, it opens up another tab, as you can see, and this is the video, okay? So you can share this particular URL to get people to here, which would be our website, too. But the other thing is you can download these videos also. You should be able to download this one here by just right-clicking and clicking on Save Link As, and you can download the video right to your computer. So, but yeah, look, we need to try to get back onto YouTube if we can, because YouTube is where things are happening. And, you know, I think we're ripe for the movement here, and they know it, they see it, they saw what we're doing, they see what we're doing in the courts, and they just want to try to silence us.
Look, if they took down the papers that we filed in court, that's a blatant First Amendment violation. No questions asked. There's nothing you violated by putting that video up, and they need to put it back up right away. And I would download it also on Vimeo. I think Vimeo is the other one that's not YouTube that people can get to with a URL. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Put them on our website. We need a URL that people can pass around. That's how you go viral. People start passing these videos around, and that's what they're afraid of. That's what the judges are afraid of. That's what all these evil swamp creatures are afraid of, is these videos that go viral. And you know, the other thing everybody here should do is you should get yourself a downloader, a YouTube downloader, and get something that's not YouTube, and they'll warn you, oh, you know, you could be violating copyrights, and don't even worry about that. It's all bullcrap, because there are videos, and download those videos to your computer so that
FreeMaker video downloader right there on my desktop. You see that? Put FreeMaker video in your search bar. You'll come up to it. Carl shared this with me. I think it was $29 or $19 or something like that. It wasn't expensive. But with that, you can download any video anywhere on any page at any time.
I have
change it into an MP4.
I have this VK video downloader. It's free unless you want to activate it, and I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, do they put the little thing in every frame that advertises them or something like that?
Oh, I don't know.
Because when the free downloads, they put a little advertisement in there for themselves.
Well, it could be.
And that's removed when you pay for it.
They must do something like that. I hadn't noticed that.
Or they don't allow you to, you can only, you know, download 10 minutes of the video. If the video is longer than 10 minutes, you don't get it. Well, maybe something like that happens also.
That are over an hour long.
But look, for $19 or $20, this was pretty good. One thing I will tell you, though, you got to be careful, because if you download some of their other things in order to try it, whenever you try to open your FreeMaker, they solicit the hell out of you. And I even found it hard to figure out how to get to where I really want to go. So I had to remove all of those things, and because they keep soliciting you for more, because they have one where you can create videos with and manipulate them and take pieces out and put pieces in and, you know, do different things like that. But anyway, let's move on back to the next call here.
Yep.
Do we have any other questions, or are we done?
We have one last question. Are there any federal guidelines or mandates overruling speedy trials being delayed by the states due to COVID-19?
Well, the courts are always open. Paper is always moving. Hearings, if it's really, look at it, if it's concerning incarceration, they should be open. Habeas corpus has not been shut down. So, matter of fact, we're going to be putting a habeas corpus through, maybe tomorrow we're going to put one in. I got to work that out. Paperwork's being done now. But we're going to put a habeas corpus in, I think, tomorrow or the next day. They can do teleconferencing through the courts if they're really that concerned. But the judges are in their chambers. Paper is flowing. Things are being read. They're just not having hearings. But emergency hearings, they have to have. And if they want to do a teleconference emergency hearing, well, that's fine. But let's get this due process going. So, okay, that's the last question?
Yes, John, that's it. No
more. Any announcements or anything?
Not really, not this week.
Okay, Gerard, you got the controls here. I'm going to introduce our common law lawyer here, Mr. Brent. You got the controls, Gerard?
I do.
Okay. All right. So let me introduce Brent, and we'll take it from there. Okay, Brent Winters. Brent, are you ready, by the way? Hopefully you're here. I do see you. Yep. Brent, star 6 to unmute yourself, unless we have to do it for you. No, he's in as a host. He should be able to do it. There he is. He unmuted himself. Okay, this is Brent Winters. Brent Winters is the author of several books. One of them is The Excellence of the Common Law. I met Brent Winters through this book. It was a gift given to me, and I read through it a couple of times, and then an individual who is one of our members, who knew Brent, I guess, from his program, brought him and me together, and, you know, we've been sharing things since then, so it's been a while. Anyway, The Excellence of the Common Law by Brent Winters. So his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. Brent, if you're talking, we're not hearing. Maybe you got another mute on. Maybe you got a mute on your mic itself or something. Or we see your mic is unmuted, but we're not hearing you.
Now you got it?
We got there you now. There you go.
Well, what was it? I'm not sure. I got problems. I just have to work through them. But this is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And my comments are my own. And I thank National Liberty Alliance, as always, for allowing me to say a few words. I am overwhelmed with what I think are the thickness and slowness of my fellow Americans, as LBJ used to say. I think I understand what's going on. Am I wrong? Oh, could be, I suppose. Oh, why would I know any different? I don't know. I've been in the political game some, I suppose. I got beat up pretty bad. John was talking a while ago about lawyers in the courtroom. If lawyers in the courtroom don't please the judge, they could get tased or jailed. It's true. That's not true for the rest of the people. If you're in that class, this and you don't go along, the evil empire uses, we call it the law of the city, but really what it is just the law of the city. The fundamental of the law of the city is that the will of the powerful party prevails. The will of the powerful party prevails. Well, who's the powerful party in most instances? Who's most powerful? Well, the state. The status quo, the state of things. The way things are and the people that are in power don't want them to change. That's the powerful party. And increasingly, I've watched it increasingly. Over the last 20, 30 years, I've watched the...
Why?
I've watched the courts lean decisively toward the government with a presumption that says the government is always right. Now, that's just not only a matter of custom at this point. That is now a matter of stare decisis. That's a matter of precedent. If the government is challenged on the regulations, for instance, the constitutionality of a regulation, then the burden is on the challenger to show that it's unconstitutional. What I mean to say is, the government, no matter what it says or does, officially or unofficially, enjoys an established presumption of correctness, a presumption of lawfulness, a presumption of constitutionality. And to challenge that, to overcome that burden, is, as a practical matter, utterly impossible. Now, somebody said a while ago, well, is there a way to use common law to stop the foolishness? I hear that a lot. Well, the answer is no. Number one, the common law is not a silver bullet. That's like saying, can we use the Bible to stop this madness? Well, the Bible's not a silver bullet either. The Bible either condemn you to hell or it'll save your breathing soul from hell. But it will do one or the other. Doesn't mean it's a silver bullet and it will stop the evil empire unless God intervenes and wants it to. But if it doesn't stop the evil empire, I mean the Word of God itself, it will condemn men to hell. As the Bible says, it never returns void. That means it'll either condemn you to hell or it'll save you from hell. That's it. But it's not, the Bible's not a silver bullet. Oh, if we could only get the people in government to do what the Bible says. Well, again, that's like saying, by analogy, can't we use the common law? Well, you could use it if people would do what it demands. But the law of the city is a law of will, of the will of men. What I want, what my lust wants, the security I want, the drugs I want, the sex I want, the prestige I want. Well, you can put it this way, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the vainglory of life. And that's what government positions offer people. And they're not interested in the least, if that's what's driving them, they're not interested in what the Bible says, that is the laws of nature's God, as our Declaration of 76 puts it, or what our common law says. Our common law, though, and our Bible, the laws of nature unwritten, lex non scripta, and the laws of nature's God written, lex scripta, are what we are to abide by, what we are to insist upon, and our common law is a way of doing things. It's not a list of laws. Add that. Let me read something here. Now, my brother is 18 months older than me, and he's always been thinking about things. Ever since we were little boys, we were always together. Well, he's older now, and he spends his time thinking and writing. He's written a few books, and he sent me something here, and I want to read it to you. This is Brent's brother. Brent's brother said this, I put at the top of this when I passed it along, this is not about a virus. This is about a virus as about much as slavery was all about the Civil War, the war between the northern and southern tiers of the States. Let me repeat that again. This virus is to what's happening right now with the shutting down of businesses and shutting down of the country and the pushing of vaccines. This virus is to that about what slavery was to the war between the northern and the southern tiers of the States. What do I mean to say? I mean to say it's just an excuse. It's something to promote to get people hyped up. For instance, do you really believe? I'm not from New York like John. I can't say it the way he says it. But I got a bridge in Brooklyn, I'll sell you, if you believe this. Do you really believe that the people in the North during those days, back when we were slaughtering each other, the northern and southern states were slaughtering each other, do you really believe the people in the North cared two hoots and a holler about the black man's plight as a slave? No, he didn't care. Why? Because he was just as racist or more racist than the people in the South. Who are we kidding? Shucks, I grew up with people like that. I grew up with people. I even knew people that had lived back during that time when I was a little boy. And that kind of racism was everywhere. The N-word was part of the vocabulary of most everybody in the North, just as it was in the South. Well, it's been that way since the beginning, but come back to the point. Slavery was to that war, and all the hell and the slaughter. It was a promotion that brought warfare and slaughter of brother against brother. This virus is to what's going now, what slavery was to what's going on then. This is not about a virus. Let me read what my brother said. He said, this is a revolution, and it is now a reality. It will last for a long time, at least the rest of our lives. Of course, we're all over 65 now. My mother sent me something here. I'll drop a footnote. My mother messaged me, and she's way up there. Her mom and dad both. Mom messaged me yesterday, 2 days ago, said, you reckon? She said, you reckon they want to get rid of folk like dad and me? Sure would save them a lot of money in retirement checks. That's what my mother said. And I responded. Her loving son responded and said, after all, you and Dad have survived. Don't let useful idiots slobbering over a twerp like Bill Gates vaccinate you or test you. Don't do it. Don't let useful idiots slobbering over a twerp like Bill Gates vaccinate you. Well, let me get back to Dave here. This revolution may quietly result in many permanent changes. The job market has shrunk. Many more families will have one parent at home full-time, so much less money will be borrowed or loaned. Folks will find that they prefer that. Banks will be furious. They will panic. When places start to reopen, the child care centers, kindergartens, and elementary schools will be far, far down the list. Children are natural disease collectors, but they are particularly sensitive to Kung flu, he calls it. It dangerously overdrives their immune systems. Crowding them into overfilled classrooms can be fatal. So people will wisely keep more kids at home. Now, if my grandmother were alive and saw that he said kids, she would have gotten right on top of him like ugly on an ape. She says that kids are goats. That's what she used to say. And children are not goats, so you call them children, not kids. Just think what that means. More children may be homeschooled, so there will be less emphasis on organized sports, but more emphasis on practical skills and academics. Our fouled-up public school systems will get stripped down and steam-cleaned, because attendance will never be the same. Less third-party child care will be required. That means less tax revenue. So the bureaucrats won't like that. But when the cultural feces hits the furious fan blades, our natural human family structures just flow back into place by necessity. All the artificially preserved, nonsensical, politically driven bullcrap, houses of cards, he's trying to tone it down there a little bit, for public consumption, the houses of cards simply cannot survive imposition of reality. And friends, This has only begun to get real. When Kung Flu hits the third world, and when the second wave hits the U.S., that's when the big long-term realities will become apparent. Much, much more is coming. But I don't tell you this to scare you. This is merely to help folks understand the new future as it unfolds. Political fantasy is being swept away as if by apocalypse, but without zombies, nukes, or collapse of civilization. Two genders, reading, writing, arithmetic, history, civics, no time for nor interest in political propaganda indoctrination, no patience with bossy bureaucrats, no money to pay for top-heavy bureaucracy and police state. Remember all those times? They're back. I pronounce no judgment here, but note my words, he says. Just like when I predicted that Donald Trump would be president, I was not offering debate then, and I'm not offering debate now, merely enlightenment. Many people did not like it, but so what? Truth is not a popularity contest. A few people have the curse or blessing of discerning truth. A few folks have the curse or blessing or of ability to recognize those people. The rest merely wonder what happened, if they notice at all. Well, that was one fellow's. Now, I disagreed with a couple of things he said there, but in the main, I think he had something to say that was worthwhile. I got this from a lady, in upstate Illinois. She said this: yesterday, when signing the forms pronouncing my dad's death, I told them under no circumstances did I want my dad's death used in the COVID-19 body count, because he died of a long-term terminal lung cancer that had spread throughout his body with absolutely no signs or symptoms at all of being sick until the day he died. He did not have the coronavirus or COVID-19. However, I was then told that for the mere fact that he hadn't been tested, they would have to list his death as possible victim of the coronavirus. This, to me, says that they most definitely are inflating counts in some way. This is upsetting, to say the least. This poor gal has made a gross understatement when she says, this, to me, says that they most definitely are inflating the counts in some ways. No, they're not inflating the counts. They're just making them up by the thousands and millions all over the world. It's a lie. It's a blasted lie. I haven't met anybody who knows anybody who has had the virus. I haven't met anybody, and I ask often, who knows anybody who knows anybody? And that's the way I ask them. Do you know anybody that's got this virus? I don't believe it's even been identified. I won't believe it until I see it. I haven't seen it. I see pictures of hospitals being built with thousands of beds. I saw that on the press conference today. Army Corps of Engineer bragging about how many hospitals he built. He had pictures of all. Where are all the sick people? In the beds. Well, I believe that DJ's playing along with the storyline. I believe he's playing along with it because, as a matter of politics, that's what he has to do. Nothing wrong with getting ready. Nothing wrong with exercising the Army Corps of Engineers. So if something does happen, they are ready. But I don't see much happening. That's why I say this is not about a virus. This is about a reset of some kind. I don't know. And I know you're coming to your own conclusions. I don't know who has the upper hand here yet. I don't know whether DJ has it or them, or whether they're vying and fighting for power. This revelation of this doctor, his name is Fossey or something, this revelation about him I want to follow up on. There's something wrong with that fellow. I've seen too many appearances of him with Bill Gates for me to think that he's on the up and up. And that gal that's with him, they seem like they're all for this vaccination and testing. There's something wrong there, but I don't know exactly what it is. Well, that's that fellow up in Minnesota. What was that fellow's name? He used to say, well, that's the news from Lake Wobegon. That's the news from my point of view, whatever it's worth. Thank you so much for allowing me a few words. Gerard, back to you. Oh, somebody said Keeler. Yes, Garrison Keeler. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Brent. And by the way, all those people that you talked about, they all have a conflict of interest, and they're all involved in making money on the vaccinations with Bill Gates and the World Health Organization. There's a couple doctors have been blowing the whistle on them big time. You're going to see some very exciting stuff coming out this week. And Trump mentioned it in his speech, this particular corporation that they gave all these millions and billions of dollars to that both Fauci and this woman are part of. So I think their world is about to blow up at this point. So it's going to be very interesting to see.
Yeah, X-22 covering a lot of this stuff. So anybody who's not listening to that, X-22 report on YouTube, that's where you get a lot of great info. I want to just jump in for a second on this dollar. I want to finish off. I found that paper. But I want to read something here. This is the Federal Reserve, a corrupt institution. This guy's name is, goodness, what's his name? Congressman, goodness, I just had it. McFadden, M-F-A-D-D-E-N. This is Congressman McFadden, and he was on the House floor. And he says, Mr. Chairman, we have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks, hereinafter called the Fed. The Fed has cheated the government of these United States and the peoples of the United States out of enough money to pay the national debt. The depredations and iniquities of the Fed has cost enough money to pay the national debt several times over. This evil institution has impoverished and ruined the people of these United States, has bankrupt itself, and has practically bankrupt our government. It has done this through the defects of the law under which it operates, through the maladministration of that law by the Fed, and through the corrupt practices of the moneyed vultures who control it. Okay, I'm not going to read any more of that. But this was written back in about 1920. Congressman, may have been the early 30s or late 20s. Okay. Now, the Fed came into existence in 1913. At that time, okay, it was $19.94 in silver dollars to make 1 ounce of gold. Okay. And so let's say the true value of a dollar, okay, is, let's say, $20 equal an ounce of gold, just to keep it simple. Within, what is it, 7 years? 7 years, 1920, it lost 50% of its value when, of course, the Fed was supposed to come into play here. They were supposed to protect the dollar. Of course, we know that's a lie now. But the value of the dollar in 1920 is $49.5 cents, is what the dollar was worth back in 1920. It had lost half of its value. Half of the value of the worth of the United States was lost in a seven-year period when the Fed came to be. Okay? Now, I wrote this back in 2008, and the ratio brought us to the value of a dollar 2 cents. So let's think about that. If you go to the store to use Federal Reserve dollars, and if it's worth 2 cents and you want to buy something for 10 cents that's valued at 10 cents, you have to pay $5 for an item valued at 10 cents. That is not an absurd or a ridiculous point. I know I go into the store sometimes and I'll buy things that is a third or a quarter of the size what it used to be when I was a kid that I paid a nickel or a dime for, and they're charging $2 today for, and it's even half of what it is or less than half of what it was when I was a kid. So I can see that relationship. I remember, my parents sending me to the movies on a Saturday morning, and they did give us 50 or 60 or 65 cents we put in our pockets. So you went to the movies with 60 cents in the late 50s, early 60s. And then the dollar was already depreciating at that point. in the 60s, the dollar was worth what? Let's see. In the 60s, it was worth, it had lost about a third of its value, only worth 33 cents. It lost two-thirds of its value. And yet, on 60 cents, I was able to get in to see a movie, and you get all these cartoons. It was the kid stuff, you know, what do they call it, the matinee. Popcorn, soda, a pretzel, and usually left with a nickel in my pocket. Okay, and that's how much money was worth. Silver coins was worth when I was a kid. And today, you know, to go to movies, what's it? If you get a discount place, you might get in for $10 or something, or $8. I mean, but generally speaking, it's like 15. You go down the city, it's probably about 20, 25, 30 bucks to go see a movie. I know down in the mall here, I think it's $14 or $16 to get in and see a movie. Then you spend $150 just to get popcorn, soda, and candy. Of course, not really that much money, but a lot of money. So anyway, the value, they've beaten the heck out of the dollar. And anybody who really wants to secure themselves, I'm telling you, put in junk silver into your Google or whatever you use. Put in junk silver and start searching around. You'll find bags of silver, $100 face value, $1,500. It's a steal. It's a steal because that's going to shoot up to $15,000, $30,000, $50,000, $100,000. Okay? Well, maybe not $100 face value that much. If you got $1,000 face value, you know, like we were talking about before, right now that's $24,000 in Federal Reserve notes. But, you know, when he makes the switch and the real dollar is laid out there, and you're buying with the real dollar, 10 cents, what someone else is going to pay $5 for, you know, that's how valuable that dime is out of that $100 bag of dimes that you may have gotten. You can get $100 dimes, you can get them in quarters, you can get them in half dollars, you can get a mix of the three, whatever you want. You can buy, the silver dollars are much more expensive, but and you can buy $1,000 face value or $100 face value. And the investment, if you're looking to secure yourself, that's where you should put. And look at anybody getting their money, you know, if you don't really have to use all that to survive, you know, what the Congress has approved. I think they're sending, what, $1,200? And I think it's $2,400 for a married couple. And I think it's $500 additional for each child you have or each dependent. So let's say you and your wife, you get $2,400. You take $1,500, get yourself a bag of $100 face silver. I mean, it's going to be worth a lot of money as soon as Trump finishes what he's got to do to make that changeover. That's the best bang for your buck. Gold is too expensive to invest in. Silver is so much. Just think, it's a 90-to-1 ratio. It's really, really low priced. They had to keep silver down in order to keep things going. Technology needed silver, you know. Nickel was required for the military-industrial complex, you know. So those items and even copper, they have suppressed those prices. Even though they're pushing high up these days, they're really still suppressed. But anyway, that's my understanding of the dollar. You can look at this here. This can be found on the website here. Articles and essays. So that was under education. I think it was here. Articles and essays right here. So yeah. So you come under education, essays and lectures, over to articles and essays. You click that button, you get to this page, and there's a lot of good stuff on this page. A lot of good stuff. I mean, this is an education in itself. This one page is just an overwhelming amount of information that'll educate you in many, many different things. You know, I don't know if anybody who's ever read the Cooper Files. Cooper Files expose the IRS for what they are. You know, and of course you have the Dodd Report and the Reese Committee. I don't know if anybody's seen that video that was done. Norman Dodd was interviewed by, goodness, what's his name, Griffin. But this is the Dodd Report. And do you know, no one can find the tail end of this report. There's pages missing on the end, and they just disappeared. You can't find them in Congress anywhere. You can't find them on the record. No one has them. No one knows where they're at. But there is quite a bit of damning information on this Dodd report. Not as much as was on the video, though. Huh?
They're what those YouTube videos they took off.
What's that?
Those papers are with your YouTube videos.
Oh, they're in the same place.
Yeah.
Our judiciary stole the right to petition. Jury nullification in the Second Amendment. We got a lot of stuff on this page, man. A lot of stuff. FOIA was the word I was looking for before. You know, you had to do a FOIA. Just to go down and get building permits moving and taking a look at some structural things. I was always able to do it. I've been doing it for 30, 40 years. Always able to go to the town and even get a copy if I wanted. Nobody ever asked me any questions or asked for any papers. And then one day I went in to get some information. They said, you got to fill out a FOIA report. I said, for what? Well, you have to. They changed the whole thing. A FOIA report was supposed to help us. That law was supposed to help the people for the things that they were not giving up so that you can use that FOIA report to force it through. But what they did is they screwed the people over again, and they require a FOIA report for everything. When I went down to the Board of Elections to go get myself a walking list for the people in my election district to become a committee man, okay, they made me fill out a FOIA request. I had to wait a week or a week and a half to get that information. I went down there. There was nobody there when I was there, maybe one person over on the Democrat side, but there was no one there. It was empty. And they said, oh, you've got to come back. Fill out the paper and come back. Now I left, so I had to come back a week and a half later, which put me off my walking in my district. And then I go and I said, well, here I am. I want to pick up my thing, you know, my walking list and so on and so forth. And the woman went over to the computer, pushed a few keys, stuck in a CD, pushed the button, and in 30 seconds popped it out and gave it to me and charged me $5, $10, whatever it was. I said, why couldn't you do that last time I was here? Is there some kind of is there anything in there redacted? Why did I have to wait? You know? They have no answer. But it's just pissing us off. It aggravates us. You got to keep the slave busy. You got to keep them angry. You got to keep them on the little things, you know, because we're forgetting about the big things like government by consent. We forgot about that. The Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the powers and the authorities given to Congress under Article 1, the administration under 2, and the courts under 3. They changed natural law and equity. Combined the two, called it civil law, and we can't even recognize it anymore because of ignorance. We let them get away with it. Yeah.
The law on the FOIA request says they can take up to so many days.
Yes.
Take up to so many. It doesn't say that they have to take.
But there were things you could get before that you didn't need a FOIA. It was just common thing.
I'm going to tell you why you can't anymore. Because they take the town clerks and they send them to these clerk schools, and they're telling them to make the people wait the maximum number of days. They're teaching the clerk. The clerks don't know why they're doing it. It's just they go to school and they say, "Don't give." I used to tell our clerk, if somebody comes in for information and it's not personal or anything that needs to be redacted, you give it to them right there.
That's right.
Don't be telling them to fill out a FOIA request. That's baloney. That's not what that's designed for. So, you know,
of course, they trained them for that. I realize that. But what I'm trying to say, though.
And what they say is, look, at you. Anytime you're giving the public, this is what they tell the clerks in the schools that we pay for. They say, anytime you're giving the public information, it's a potential lawsuit against your town. So you don't want to give them anything
right.
at all if you can help it. That's what they're telling them. You know,
I know they tell them all kinds of stuff. It really doesn't matter what they tell them. The bottom line is they tell them not to give it to you until they go through the exercise and the time runs out, which again is the point. The point is I'm the boss. They work for me.
But
if there's nothing in there that could injure somebody.
They're following a policy.
I understand. But we're letting them get it. They were able to discern before. They can still discern now. But, of course, the whole thing is about a lockdown.
I would say to the clerk, well, what are you going to do with this FOIA request? Are you going to redact stuff? Why can't you give me this information right now? The law says I can have it whenever, or you could delay me 15 days or whatever. Why are you delaying me? You have a reason for that?
Well, just think about it. What if I came late and I only had a week left to walk my papers?
Yeah.
Right. You know? And by the way, that would have been... there's a law for that. Anybody running for an office, if they're forget how it's worded. Do you remember that law?
Yeah, something like they have to expedite for you.
Well, yeah. Well, no. If they interfere with your running for election, it's like 10 years in jail. It's under USC 18.
Yeah.
I don't remember which one it is. I mean, I can find it. You know, I do keep records of all those things, and I can get a hold of them pretty. Takes me a little while sometimes, but I can find those things. But the bottom line is, it's even on their own laws, which they don't apply to themselves, of course. I mean, why should they? I mean, they're above the law. They're above us. You know, we're the slaves. They're the boss. They're the owners of this country, not us. And unless the people wise up to take it back, we're going to lose it. And doesn't matter what Trump does. Doesn't matter. If you think Trump is the savior of this nation and he's going to get our nation back and he's going to give it to you and you're going to have all your liberties, you're in a dream world, okay? You're just dreaming away. Just stay asleep, because it's never going to happen. Those courts are locked down in civil law, and you are not going to get justice. They're going to maintain that status quo. And now, there'll be a time period, okay? And if the people don't step up and take fill the vacuum, that power vacuum that is going to take place when the swamp is drained, that is to take control of the election process, take control of our courts. If we don't get up to do that, government agencies, the people in government's going to go back and get it. They're going to take control of it again. And we're only going to be right back where we started from. Your children will never see liberty, never, unless we get up to save it now. That's our duty. That's our job. We have to do that now. There is no more time. Now is the time. The war is on. How is it that, what's his name put it, they've got to go out into the fields and to fight the battle? What was his name?
Jim Condit.
No. Going back, our founding fathers. We've read his
Patrick
his
Henry.
Speech. Huh?
Patrick Henry.
Patrick Henry, yes. Yeah. Right. Get out into the fields are already out there. They're at war already. Why are you staying here idle? Let's go. Let's fight it. Let's win it. Well, let's go. Let's fight it. Why are you standing here idle? Let's win it. All right. I'll pass this back to you, Gerard. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So let me take the first. Okay, we got Jim from California. Go ahead, Jim. You've been unmuted.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, yep, can.
Yeah. So I was wondering, I was looking over the papers on the site there, and if you'd submit an affidavit, does your name get added onto the list, or do you have to do something else?
For which? For the ILS?
Yes.
Yeah, for the IRS, you only need to get a hold of intake at nationalliberty.org. Jim will get in touch with you and talk to you. It's just have to get an affidavit, and we'll attach you. Just make sure you mention the names of the people that are injuring you, where you're at in your case. In other words, it could be that they're just roughing you up and sending you letters and just frightening you, or they could be leaning your property or trying to lien your property, serving notice of liens, or maybe you're in court already. Any state, okay, has got to write an affidavit, 2 pages or less. Make sure you make the note of how much money. You know, look, at they come out after people for ridiculous things. Ridiculous things, okay? They're going out after my son. Now, he's a cash register. He makes just barely over. He makes minimum wage, okay? And trying to get the 135 or 140. No, exactly. I get around. It's $100,000 in taxes. He's a kid. What's wrong with these people?
Yeah, I know. You know? Well, they came and took my house, so I'm.
This is requiring them to reinstate you back to your original state and $1,000in real money, which is about $24,000, which is what we wrote up. I probably should have wrote it up per individual. That would have been a lot of money, but anyway. In any event, it's not too. It'll be too late when we have our first, court hearing. There will be a court hearing on this, but it's not going to happen until we get to the other side of things and Trump gets his business done. We start putting these people in jail. We start executing. We've indicted, goodness, 20, 30, 40, you know, federal judges, state judges, town judges. We've indicted a lot of judges. And those indictments will go through at that point in time. And then we will come, because he's taken out the Fed anyway, you know.
Okay. Yeah, so, I read the indictments, and I noticed that Phyllis J. Hamilton is in the indictment, so that I know you guys got all my paperwork. But anyway, okay, very good. I'll contact Jim Pearson again and make sure.
Yeah, anybody who wants to attach themselves to this case, okay, the IRS case, it only requires an affidavit. Make sure that you put the names of the people that are violating you, because those are the people that we're going to chase. Okay?
Okay. I'll go back and review what I submitted just to make sure everybody's in there, but I appreciate that. Thank you, and I've got a few other people that want to sign on, too, and also become members, so I'll forward them your way.
And also, if anybody else wants to move their case into our case, we're still accepting that, too. You know, there's all kinds of cases, people, non-judicial foreclosures. We're still doing habeas corpuses.
Okay.
So,
very good. Excellent. Thank you very much for taking care of that.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye now.
Yep. Okay. We only got one other person in the queue, so anybody wants to get in, do it.
Yeah, star six. Star six and one to get into the queue.
Okay. We got Barbara from New York.
Hi.
Hey.
Barbara from New York. Hi. I wanted to know... yesterday, I think it was the governor of New York announced that he was going to do the most aggressive testing of people, you know, that in the country. He was going to lead the country in testing for antibodies. And then he said he was going to start, and then he was going to double it and double it. I don't want that. I think it's a major risk. And I wanted to know how... You know, if someone's at the door or if you're in your car and the policeman says you have to submit, what do you do?
You refuse. You just refuse. Whatever you got to do, you refuse. First of all, they have to arrest you, and they have to go through a judge. They're not going to go there yet. I mean, they're not going to go to your house. I mean, on the road, they might be able to pull some baloney, but I don't think they're going to go house to house. Look, it's getting ready to fail already. He's not. I don't believe
he's going to have to get legislation through first.
Well,
really?
No, they're
although
doing
he does have emergency powers, so he could try it that way.
He's doing executive orders, but look at
is
Donald
he?
Trump. Yes.
Yeah. Trump and Barr's not going to put up with that.
Trump said that there's 7 governors he's going after. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, I don't know if you heard his speech. But that's what he did. He said, I'm not mentioning any names except for the Virginia governor because he took guns away, and he said, that's wrong. So he said he's telling everybody up front, that's treason what that Virginia governor did. And he basically said he's going after them, him.
Okay.
He said, but we
what
have...
What town are you in, Barbara?
I'm in Westchester.
Well, sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
you have no sheriff down there. The sheriff is gone. There's 7 counties in New York without sheriffs, and Westchester is one of them. Move to Dutchess. You know, I already spoke to my sheriff about these things, and my sheriff said if I called him, I asked him, I said, if I call you, you're going to come out and protect us? He said, yes, he would. Uh-huh. So that's my sheriff here in Dutchess County.
So go camp out in a Walmart in Dutchess County. Put your camper up until it blows over. Look, you're not going to have trouble unless you go to the hospital. See, I wouldn't go to the hospital unless my freaking leg was falling off or something. You know what I mean?
Right. I agree.
I wouldn't go to the hospital. Just don't put yourself in their care. They're going to have a hard time. They're not going to forcibly test yet. I mean, there's people, too many people pushing back right now. And if they do forced testing or forced vaccination, I guarantee you that that's going to be a revolution or civil war,
okay,
whatever you want to call it. There's people locked and loaded, ready to go against that. And if they don't know that, they're pretty stupid. And
Go ahead. Sorry. Are there any forced vaccinations anywhere in the country now where they're actually forcing it?
I have not heard of that. I have not heard of that, no.
Okay.
And I really don't think that Trump's going to stand for that.
Okay.
But we'll have to see what develops. And I think by the time they get that set up, it's going to be over. I think it's moving really fast.
Okay.
They got the cure for it. They got that quinine stuff that actually takes care of it, and it's not dangerous and all that other stuff. That whole thing with the ventilators was a bunch of baloney. Dr. Shiva says if you put people on a ventilator, you just ruin their ability to take oxygen, which is really what they need when they're in distress. They need that oxygen. He said that ventilator goes in and destroys the lungs. Once you intubate, you just gave them a death sentence. 90% of the people that go on a ventilator will die, just so you know. So you don't want to go on a ventilator.
Trump said avoid that ventilator. He said that on stage, and, you know, and so Fauci was, like, frowning.
He's saying a lot of things. He's coming right out, and he also mentioned, what the heck was the name of that corporation that Fauci and that other doctor are in? And he just came
talking
right
about
out.
Who?
No. It's something like...
Corporation?
And I'm sure that woman and Fauci were dying when he
Griff,
said it.
Dying about the corporation.
Yeah, because he said they gave billions of dollars, and we're going to look into that. He just blurted it out. He didn't prepare it. He just said it.
Wonderful.
You know.
Well, he also said he was going to get to the bottom with China things, and they're looking into it, and they're going to deal with it. They already know what they're going to find. I'm sure they're going to find A, it was a bioweapon.
They know that
deep
Fauci.
State was involved.
Fauci did it. He gave $3.7 billion dollars to China after they put a moratorium on testing that stuff.
Yeah.
So he's already implicated, you know?
Yeah.
He's done.
So do you think that one of these seven judges that Trump said he's going after would include New York?
No, governors.
I mean, I'm sorry, that's what I meant, governor.
I don't know if it would
be. I pray that it is. He's one of the worst, I'm sure. Look, he's trying to take our guns away. He's been trying to do it for years, and his father was trying to do it. They don't stop.
He said, PREPFAR. I bet you don't know what that is. I know what it is. Most people don't know what it is.
Yeah,
but they spent billions of dollars. Well, PREPFAR is who that woman doctor, I forget her name, and Fauci.
Griff?
Yes.
Is he watching Griff?
Yes.
Yeah.
Her and him and Bill Gates all make money with PREPFAR. They all have a conflict of interest. They shouldn't even be anywhere next to running this thing with the vaccinations and stuff. Because they all have a conflict of interest and they make money. And Fauci, he's the one that got that whole AIDS scare going, and it was all a bunch of baloney.
Oh.
And this
and
is his second
the,
go-around.
The cure, which hurts them, right?
Well, first of all, the AIDS virus doesn't cause AIDS. It's a lie from hell. A lot of people have that little virus in them. And they just picked out some unknown virus, and they said... Oh, well, we see this in this particular population, which happened to be in intravenous drug users and homosexuals, and then they drew a line to the AIDS virus. Well, half the world has the AIDS virus in them. It doesn't mean anything. You know, it's antibodies to the AIDS virus because you come into contact with it. And first of all, what they're finding out is these viruses aren't what actually causes the sickness. The viruses that are the result of the sickness, just like everything else they do. They're always treating the symptom and not the cause. And so this is all coming out now. Look, we have a lot of technology that they've held back from us, both in energy and in health, and that's all due to explode out. They don't want any of this to go because it puts an end to their whole regime. So
this is going to... Hopefully fail like the whole impeachment thing. I hope.
Look, he's just right now. I think Trump is playing along, giving them enough rope to hang themselves. And I mean, just the way he's dumping stuff out there when he's on, you know, with no introduction. PREPFAR. You know what PREPFAR is? I bet you don't. Most people don't. I know what it is. And then he proceeded to talk about it. And you notice you don't see them doctors out there with him anymore. I wonder if he already defunded the WHO. Defunded them.
Yep.
Done.
That was wonderful.
Yes. So, and who's running that? Fauci. So, you know, anyway, I'm very encouraged with that, with those two things.
Can I It's just wonderful news. But just so I know, in case something does happen, if you're in the car and a policeman tells you you have to open the window, you have to do this, and you haven't done anything wrong, what do you do? I mean,
well, I would open the window only because they'll break it if you don't. And they'll have an excuse to drag you out.
Yeah, as long as you comply, but then resist when they say, "Well, we want to put this needle in your arm." Nope. You see, okay. I don't think they'll go. Look, it's not going to go there anyway. There's a lot that has to happen before it gets there, and I do not believe one second that Trump's going to permit that. I think Barr is not going to permit that. No, it's not going to happen. And remember, as Gerard said, there are 7 governors that he's not happy with. I don't know what his intent is. Hopefully, it is to go after them, you know, and charge them with serious crimes. But in any event, okay. I hope that this clown here in Albany is one of them.
Oh, yeah. I know he doesn't like him very much. I mean, he tweets a lot about him.
Well, don't forget Trump's from New York, so he's no stranger to the baloney over here.
He's been dealing with him for years. He's involved. The HUD thing is something that touches on the whole real estate thing, so... I mean, he should be a direct opponent. I don't know. Anyway.
Well,
we've got some other callers here, so.
Okay, thank you. That's really great.
Okay.
I appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Barbara.
Okay. Have a good.
Hang on, I got to get back to my screen here. Oh, my goodness, I got too much stuff open here. Mm-hmm. I went looking for that woman's name, and hang on. Let's see. Where are we? Well, I think I can. Oh, I know where it is. It's on my other browser. That's what's wrong.
Yeah, I'll open up the next caller. Greg, go right ahead. You got the
there
mic.
There you go.
Hey, this is Greg in Detroit. You guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
How you doing tonight?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Good. A couple of things I wanted to comment on. One, you're talking about the tax refund, or not refund, I'm sorry. You're talking about the payment, the $1,200 payment from the IRS.
Yeah, the stimulus. The stimulus right. It's coming from the Fed, Fed ultimately, but then.
I'm familiar with the concept. They have a spot on the IRS website where to speed up your payment, you can give them account information of where you want it deposited, basically your account and routing number, okay? So I thought rather than wait for it in the mail, I thought I would do that. I got into it a couple nights ago, and, you know, early on in that thing, it tells you that you are giving up your right to privacy on your computer to the IRS, that you're giving them permission to go through all your files, all your photos, look into all your internet web browsing, all of that kind of stuff.
Imagine
and they actually make a statement. They have a sentence in the paragraph that says, "You have no right to privacy here." They say that. America's favorite non-government institution. That's what they have to say when you use their website, at least for this purpose. You have no right to privacy, and they can go all through your computer if they like, if you use their site. So I passed. I didn't do it. I could use the money. I don't need it that badly. And, you know,
well,
I
you should get it anyway. You should get it anyway. It might be delayed.
Well, they were saying on the news today it may be months before some people get their check in the mail. So
I think it'll be years before I ever get mine. But anyway.
But fortunately, I don't need it, at least for the time being, as bad as some people. And I sell health insurance, and I'm from home over the phone, you know, online with a software program from the company I work with. I'm licensed in about 23 different states. So I'm talking to people all around the country in the last 2-3 weeks. I've talked to people in every region of the country that really want to have health insurance again because they just lost it, having just lost their jobs. The problem is they are uncertain about whether they're going to get unemployment or how much it's going to be, when they're going to get it, and they're really hesitant about making a commitment to buying health insurance again. So it's a real dilemma. You know, it's a really, I'm getting quite a view of the situation, and people in every state are facing the same thing. It's really pretty bad, and a lot of these people are really pretty worried. Another thing I wanted to mention
Greg, before you move on, can you get us copy of the links or on that website where it says these things? Can you get a copy of that to us?
Possibly, but their site is simply irs.com, and they have a tab to hit regarding the coronavirus stimulus. If you just follow that in two or three steps, it'll take you to it.
Okay.
You know,
we're going to do a paper on that.
Listen,
I'll bet to the president.
I'll bet if you have electronic deposit, even if you're on Social Security or disability, I'll bet in the fine print of that it says the same damn thing. How many people ever look at the TOS terms of service when you go online and you buy something or you use a service, and they got 60 million pages of fine print that you have to read? And most of the time, it's all about giving up your rights and your.
Well,
no, but bear in mind, even though
talking to the IRS.
Bear in mind, though, even though they do those things, nevertheless, in a court of law, I mean, a real court of law, not these civil law courts, but in a court of law, that would never hold up, and they'd be liable. I remember going very early in business. I was involved in contracts, and I didn't know enough, so I did go see a lawyer about it one time, and we went through certain things, and he started picking out things here. He says, hey, this is against the law. They can't do that. You can't pad a contract. And because what's happening is money connected to it. And there are certain things you can't do, okay? And this is called fraudulent things, like saying, well, okay, in order for us to do this, you've got to give up your rights. Well, first of all, you can't give up an unalienable right. You can exercise it or not exercise it, but you cannot have it transferred away from you, because otherwise it wouldn't be unalienable, wouldn't be natural. But in any event, you are kind of signing. In this environment, you're in trouble. In the court system they have, you're in trouble. On the other side of it, if we take the courts back, that's only if the people get up to do what they got to do on the grassroots. On the other side of it, we would win, hands down.
Listen, technically, that's an adhesion contract. It has the lowest form of enforcement in a court of law because there was no negotiation. You did not have a chance. They wouldn't even send you a paper to do it through the mail.
Right, no meeting of the mind.
If they sent you a paper, I mean, you should find out, can you fill it out and mail it in? Because if you can, you just cross that line out. You cross out that paragraph, and you initial it and say, I don't agree to that. And see what happens.
Or you can put the all rights reserved with your signature.
Yeah. And
well, if I got something to write, so far, I haven't received anything from them. I didn't see anywhere where you can print something to mail in. They may have it.
I don't think they want you to. I think, look, they want a cashless society. They want to get your computer stuff. They're not going to let you send anything, and they don't want any paper. They're trying to get away from paper. You know what I mean? So they're not going to give you and plus they know that you have an opportunity to make changes, and then they would actually have to read it, and they don't read anything. Everything just gets stamped through. You know, I mean, look at what the credit card companies do. They send you a check, and they got on the back of the check when you sign it, it says that you're agreeing to all the terms of the contract on the back of the check, or on the back of the bill, you know what I mean? So we should do the same thing to them. I'm sending you this check, and if you cash this check, that means you're abiding by my terms and conditions. My terms and conditions are that you no longer tax me, you know what I mean, or something to that effect.
Yeah. Oh, and listen, I just came across something here because I'm looking at their site. It says if you have a filing requirement and did not file a tax return for 2018 or 19, you must file a 2019 tax return to receive the payment. Well, you know, I was going to, and my tax preparer told me a month ago that they've delayed it, which I know they have, I think, till July 15th, the deadline. She said she wants to wait.
Yeah, Trump made them move that. Over. Trump made them move that. He trumped them on that and said no, and he says that's not so, and he ordered them to go forward without that having to happen. Now, if you've never filed a tax report at all, ever, you got to do something, of course.
I've done them all up to 2018. I did not do last year's yet because my tax preparer wants to wait a while. She's worried about this virus thing. But it does say here that if you didn't do the 2019 return, you're not going to receive a payment.
Well, it says if you're required. So that's another big thing.
And have not filed a tax return for 2018 or 19, you must file a 2019 tax return to receive a payment.
If you have that's if you got taxable income. And what is taxable income?
Well, even that, but Trump said no. No, I was ready to write papers two weeks ago on this.
So I don't know, but they don't, you know, this needs to be clarified, and it's not clear here. What they're saying here is until we get your 2019 filing, you're not getting your payment.
Look it. They're evil. You know that. You know all these people are evil, okay? Well, Trump has already said no. When I found out about this, and I found out quite quickly a couple of weeks ago, and I already started writing papers on it, and within a day or two, then I'm hearing Trump talking about it because someone talked to Trump about it at one of the press conferences, and he said, no. And he ordered them not to do that. Now, that doesn't mean they're not going to take it off their website, because if they can sucker you in to do it anyway, they'll sucker you in. But they'd love to have everybody in the country to report to get their $1,500, because for them, that's a honey trap, and that's all that
right,
is.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. And look, here, one other thing I wanted to mention, and I'll let you guys get on to the next caller. Around here, from what I hear from people in different areas and what I've seen the few times I've been out driving, going on this errand or that, which is not so much anymore with this stay-at-home thing, especially here in Michigan. You've heard how it is here in Michigan. But, man, they're installing 5G equipment around in some areas around here like gangbusters while people are stuck in their houses and not getting out to see what's going on. And that includes, I've heard, in a lot of schools around the country. And they also have some units now, I guess. I read something about a European company making units that are designed to go underground, like in the sewers and in manhole openings and things below the street where people don't see them for 5G antennas. I talked to a woman a day or two ago that lives in Oakland County. You might have heard of Oakland County, very affluent county in Michigan, one of the most affluent in the country, I guess, or it used to be. She said they're even digging up blocks at a time down the roadways in residential areas and laying these underground electrical-looking cables, which she knows is for 5G. And she talked to some of the AT&T and Verizon contractors. She said they told her that they've been going round the clock, working three shifts, 24/7, a big rush. They don't even understand why. And they're all subcontractors, one company under another. They have nobody at the top to ask why the big rush. And they themselves told her they think it's strange. And they told her, you know, when they started this big rush and went to 24-hour round-the-clock work, the first day that the stay-at-home order came into effect. So there's something fishy about that, and a lot of people just aren't seeing it. I've saw some big, huge tower structures built off of a highway here, 696, a main highway, going through the northern suburbs of Detroit a week ago. First time I'd been by there for a month, and neither of them were there a month ago, and now I go by a week ago, and, man, these things are giant, and they put them up quick.
Well, 5G... is what they need for their Internet of Things. That's going to track everything, even down to a pencil that you buy from the store. And I heard another thing today that I don't know how true it is, but they said this whole 6-foot rule, staying 6 feet apart, they said when they put that chip in you, you need to be 6 foot away from somebody else or your two signals blur and they can't count you.
So it's like you're going to be on a radar screen of some sort.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but you know what? Nothing surprises
me. No, not to me. Right. No, it's military stuff. The doctor that was talking about this said that the military used it to track their soldiers for years when they're out in the field somewhere if they want to keep an eye on them in the battle situation. I believe it.
Yeah.
And you know the symptoms. I'm sure you read the symptoms that they're calling 5G. Some radiation people are symptoms. Saying are symptoms of cell poisoning from radiation.
Yeah, well, guess what? That's the same symptoms of the coronavirus, too, flu-like symptoms.
Right.
The same
that's,
thing.
No, that's
hey, Greg.
Right.
Greg, can you see my browser?
You know what? I didn't log in tonight, and I usually do, but let me try to real quick. Well, I'm at my computer.
Yeah, I was trying to find out where this thing is at. There's so many links to hit.
What are you screen sharing on John?
Mm-hmm.
On this? What are you screen sharing?
Yeah, yeah. We've been screen sharing since the beginning of our program tonight.
Oh, well, I don't see that.
You don't open your browser?
Well, I got the browser open.
I don't know. Maybe people have to do something. Maybe I've been sharing it with nobody. I don't know.
You know what? I just upgraded and went to Windows 10 today, and I don't know if my password or anything is going to be saved. Probably not. I'm having to do them all again. But you're wanting to find out what the IRS site where it said that about.
Yeah, if you can, you know, just write down on a notepad or something, you know, the steps you took to get to that page, and then just send it to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll get it. Mail, M-A-I-L, @nationallibertyalliance.org. So if it's three or four steps, whatever links to hit, just tell us. And I want to get out there and look, because I want to inform the president on this. We'll send him a paper.
Okay.
But anyway, we have other callers here, and it's coming late. Huh?
I will look for it tomorrow.
Okay, appreciate it.
All right,
Greg. We got other callers. We got a couple more.
Yeah, you guys have a good night, and thanks for your time.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Great. What have we got? Jim from California up again or no? Go ahead, Jim. I thought.
Hey, guys. Sorry to jump back in again. I just wanted to give you guys a heads up. You guys all run Windows, is that correct, on your machines?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So I don't know if you're aware of this. I worked for Microsoft for a number of years, and I'm a network engineer by training. So during antitrust case against Microsoft back in the 90s. One of the terms of the agreement was that Microsoft had to put a back door into all their operating systems for the feds.
You know, that was my presumption, and that's why we have to deal with viruses and break-ins and all this other crap.
That is correct. And so the other problem, of course, is the design of the operating system is lacking in the fact that they use something called a registry. The registry becomes a vector for all kinds of attacks and targeting and so forth. So, like I say, if you guys are running Windows, I certainly wouldn't visit the IRS site simply because they can activate that registry key and then use it to turn your machine on and probably grab the data that they want off of it.
How about if I use the Brave Tor browser? They can't. They
no,
probably
won't help you. Doesn't help you. No. So
I think the only way you can beat it is to operate inside of Linux.
That's correct. Yeah, running it like under a DOS box or something like that. I'm a Linux user. I've been a Linux user for more than 20 years now.
Is there any way for me to get Linux and put my Windows 7 with my also? I also have Windows. Oh goodness, what do they call that? XP.
Yeah, you can run it as a virtual machine inside of Linux.
Right. Well, I have a virtual XP inside of my Windows 7. So can I move my Windows 7 with the virtual XP into a Linux and operate at virtual there, I guess?
Yes, you can. Absolutely.
What kind of problems do you think they would have with trying to do bank doing bank stuff, banking?
Given that a little backstory. In 2007 or 2008, RSA, the company up here in Redwood City, California, they were broken into physically, and they never spoke about what was stolen.
RSA happens to be the encryption company that does all the bank encryption. So from the perspective of doing online banking, it's absolutely not secure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't advocate any online banking because it is not secure. There is no way that it can be protected because my belief is, and many other security researchers believe, that the seed was actually compromised that's used for their encryption technology. Now, given that and people still want to do the banking thing, I mean, I certainly wouldn't do it off of a Windows machine. The other thing that I would probably consider would be making, if you can, tell the bank that you want to use two-factor authentication. If you know what two-factor authentication is, it's where they contact you for a transaction outside of the computer, so via a cell phone or something like that. That way, at least they have to call you back before a transaction is processed. You guys still there?
Yeah. I don't know what happened to John.
Yeah, no, my mic was muted. But okay, I appreciate the information.
Yeah, very good. All right, guys, have a good evening.
Thank you.
Okay. Next victim is a wireless caller. I have no idea who. Go ahead. You've been unmuted, wireless caller. You got a name and a state?
Yeah, Chuck, Ohio.
Okay.
Good call tonight on IRS, but the question is anybody getting any relief from them bums?
Well,
I wanted to say something else, but
They're the worst ones.
With what we're doing?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
as far
doing,
as
is anybody getting any relief? They just stole my farm.
They what?
Stole this farm.
Well, look, you see, they got away with it for one of numerous reasons. Either you acquiesced, okay, or you responded, you went to their meetings and talked with them, you acquiesced. You started communicating and participating with certain things, or you made a signature on their forms, 1040 forms, or whatever they call those things, you know, you acquiesced. You see, any of those things put you in the game. If you're out of the game and you haven't signed those papers and you aren't letting them get away with writing you a letter without responding in detail, I respond in detail to everything they do. And they only got a couple of different things that I have to really respond to. The letters are just all BS anyway. But they refer to certain things. By what authority they do this? By what authority they do that? Well, I actually look up the law. That's what this paper was all about. I look up the law. I write a letter back. And talk about these things. Where is your authority? By what, you know, show cause. Show me the authority that you have. I do everything by affidavit, okay? And I do it pretty much like a notice and demand. They got to answer me. If they don't answer me, they're going to acquiesce. And they do answer me back. Last time they answered me back with, well, we're going to take this under consideration. It's going to take some time to do some research. We'll get back to you later another time. And then they turned around, and then they went after my son, and then they moved my son. They're claiming he owes $100,000+, which he's a cash register in ShopRite. How do you get pay taxes on $100,000+? You know.
Well, you got a deal from the bottom of the drawer, John.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, they send him a letter telling him they're passing his thing because you know I put him into the case with us, and then I wrote a letter on his behalf, same language that I use. You know, they don't have everything they're doing is a fraud. When they do, they're going to talk about a notice of lien. You better give me a proof of claim. And if you're going to go into my account, you better show me your authority, your fiduciary authority over my estate. Who are you to come out?
Oh, yeah.
And there's two forms, Form 56 and 4490. That's an affidavit form. They can't fill them out. They can't file them. So they're filing a notice of lien fraudulently. Okay, and so all of that is a crime. All of these are crimes, and that's how you got to go after them back. I've been dealing with these people for over 20 years. I've been lucky in the beginning, but I think I got a little knowledge now, so it's kind of another thing at this point in time in my life. But They will do anything. So now they're trying to do this thing where they're trying to take this money from my son, which he only makes minimum wage. Okay, they got this collection agency. So I'm going after all of them. I'm doing a notice and demand on them. Every agent involved, whoever writes the papers, I don't care whether what they, you know, they could be a robo-signer. It's still someone pushed that button. Going after that. I'm going after the commissioner, Whitlig or whatever his name is. And I'm going after the board of directors. There are four of them on that corporation that is contracted with the IRS. It's probably them, anyone under another corporate name. I'm going after the four board members that they named, and every one of them. I'm suing. We're going to sue for $1,000 face value, Morgan Silver dollars, for violating rights, for fraud, and I'm going to start that with a notice and demand. Then I'll move it into the local state court and then do a show cause why
to go into a state court when they're crooked.
Well, look, you move it through the system and then you move it into federal court for cause for violating your due process rights for not giving you a court of record. Again, it's a pressure game. And then you move it from that court to another court to another court. And but again, at some point, I'm moving into the move for cause on our federal court here case.
Listen. Just so you know, John's done this before, and the last time, they dropped the case and gave him a letter of apology and release of lien. So you ask if anybody's ever having success. Well,
hey, I had five liens removed because I did it another way too, and then they kicked it back in again later on, but. I went into U.S. District Court, and I says, here, with everything that IRS gives me, I says, I'll pay you. Sign this under penalty of perjury that it's true, correct, and not to mislead. They don't do it.
You got to keep looking. You got to control the narrative. Again, you got to control the narrative.
Who will help them take your property?
Well, John sued the sheriff and the clerk and everybody.
Yeah, they're all ignorant.
Before they exercised the lien, he had the bank on notice. I sued the bank, the sheriff, the agents, everybody that touched it. You got to be quick, though, because you don't have very little time to do that.
7 days.
You're not going to a court because the court's all against you. They're all bar attorneys. You cannot.
It doesn't matter, though. When you file a paper, there's due process. They have to answer. The least you can do is stall them.
Yeah, there's different things you move from one court to another to another to another. And in that process of time, first of all, you're looking for a judge that gets a little nervous of you, that they begin to wonder, who is this person? What do they know? Because they know a lot more than anyone that comes into this courtroom. Look, I know more than any of these lawyers that go into these courtrooms when it comes up to the Title 26. Okay, or they could be pretty savvy on USC 18 and others, but the Title 26, they're morons, okay? And so they're not going to get anywhere. You've got to keep – look, you've got to control the narrative of the court, number one. You've got to keep them on – they've got to keep them on the defensive. You've got to be on the offensive all the time. You've got to lay it in the court, the necessary information to signal the judge that you know what's going on here and this is your next step. And every time I move – and any judge that doesn't see it, well, then they're sleeping, okay? Every time I move from one court to another, I'm suing that judge. And that judge is coming in as an individual, and I'm going after that judge also for $1,000. And if there's a prosecutor on it, but in this case there wasn't, I'm suing them for $1,000 face value, Morgan Coons also. And we'll go for the next court, move it in, and keep going. Huh?
I want to send it to the grand jury, but
that's what we are here, and we are filing all our papers, and that's where you move it. When you move it into federal court, I would move it into our case right here, okay? And that's what we've done with the IRS. That's what I've done, and I'm going to move the case against my son that they're coming out with these people. That is a collection agency. Go figure that. The IRS, a collection agency, is hiring another collection agency, another private organization, on another name to collect a debt that doesn't exist. Fraud.
Yeah,
okay. And in my paper, when I file this paper, this notice and demand, I already started writing it. When I file this paper, they're not going to have any way to move, that if we can get into a court of justice, which I believe we eventually will, okay, they're going to be in jeopardy because they're going to be found fraud on the court. They're going to be found denial of due process. I mean, all kinds of conspiracy, all kinds of RICO, all kinds of charges that I'm going to apply through my notice and demand to let them know what I'm going to do if they don't fix this thing in 30 days. And I'm not giving, I'm not suing the federal government, so I don't have to give them 90 days. These people work for a private corporation called the Internal Revenue Service, okay? That's not a government agency. There's no way Congress never created IRS, a government agency. Never happened. That's something created by the Federal Reserve, a private banking institute, that found its way onto the list of federal agencies in 1972. Okay, and they're not real. They're a fraud. I even got the papers of their corporation where they incorporate. I got the papers of incorporation for the IRS, and I believe we got them for the Federal Reserve too. So it's all fraud. Now they're going to see when they get the papers, they will read. They, unless they're really really dumb, okay, they're going to see this thing ever gets into a place where there's a judge that's going to do right here. I'm going to jail for a long time. See, that's where you got to put these people into that position. If you're not going to put them into that position, you're not going to win in a battle against these people.
How many people do I need to set up a grand jury?
Well, look, you can't. That's a very touchy thing because you have to understand how things work. You have to understand the process of the court. You have to do it. What we've done, when we set up a grand jury, we knew that we didn't want them to come say, oh, that's just some small group in some corner here in New York State. No. We are in every single state. We went out and we visited every state and almost every county. You know, there are counties that are, there's bears and, you know, Sasquatch. There's nobody there, you know. But, I mean, every county we visited, okay, well, we did 2, 3, 4 counties at a time sometime in central location. Okay, and we rose this thing up from the ground up, and then we created, we talked to them about coming in to becoming a grand jury. The states, each state created its own common law, unified state common law grand jury, you know, unified New York, unified New Jersey, unified, every state of the union did this, okay? They have their seals, they have an address, they're an existing body within the state. Then they came together as the 50 states, came together in the unified United States common law grand jury. And then we do all the paperwork. Meanwhile, we are educating people so that they can do this on their own. You need to get educated. You need to do it properly, and you need to be careful. And if you read our paperwork and join up with us, eventually you can get it going in your county. We are training people to raise up grand juries and an administration for those grand juries in every single county in America. Our plan is laid out. If you go to our website under People's Duty, click on Organizing Your County and watch the videos on there, read the information, and start coming to the meetings. Get a meeting going in your county. Work together with the people here at NLA, which will help build your grassroots with you. And you get it going from the grassroots up. Then get a grand jury going in there. Then you get the committee men going in there. We take back the political process. We decide who goes on the ballots. And we remove people by recall if we don't like them. We the people, will sit and decide whether we permit some kind of an accusation against one of the people or not by the state. We, the people, will form a grand jury or a trial jury with the power and the authority of nullification and understanding their authority. We, the people, will do it. But you have to learn it. Again, we are here because people are ignorant. If people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. Not going to happen. I got a bridge in Brooklyn.
Well, I don't see anything on the website that shows Ohio doing anything.
I don't know. Let's go take a look. Let me take a look. Go into the directory. Let's look up some state coordinators. We do have a lot of people that fell asleep. And we're in the process of waking them up. We got 10 districts divided throughout the whole country. Phone calls are being made or being prepared to make to get these people to get back and re-spark them back up or get new people to lead the states. and to get county organizers. I mean, we're working diligently on this, but this requires everybody. A handful of people can't do it. We need everybody. Many hands make light work. And if you don't have enough hands, you're not going to get the work done. But let me look at Ohio. Ohio, we have Rosanna. Rosanna used to be very active. I don't know if she still is. But she's in Ohio. She's a state coordinator. We'll be calling her soon. And if you want to talk with Rosanna, you need to talk with your district leader, and that whoever the district leader is, and if you want to be a district leader, we need more, or a state coordinator, definitely a county organizer, getting your grassroots going. But, you know, we'll work with you on that phone call to Rosanna to see if we can get her going and moving and try to find other people in Ohio that want to take that state position to help coordinate the counties to get the organizers on the county level to organize the people in the counties. Okay? This is what Obama done. This is what the left done. This is how they took our nation from us. They did all this grassroots work. They got out there and they stimulated the people with their socialism and paid them off and did all kinds of things. And that's how they came to power. We need to do the same thing. We need to take back the committeemen. We need to take back our courts. We're looking to hire 4 administrators in each county for each court that will administrate the orientation of the jury and administrate to the juries, both grand and petit jury, in order to educate them, inform them, and answer their questions, assist them in their paper writing, and make sure that they're not abused by judges or prosecutors. But the people have to do this. I can't do this alone. The few people we have at the national level, maybe we've got 30 people or so working hard on the national level, but that's not enough. We need 15,000 people across America. We need people to step up. So anyway, act with Jan, and he'll connect you with your district leader. And then you guys can make the phone calls together, and we can see if we can resurrect Rosanna and see who else we can find. Now, Rosanna is just the Ohio State Coordinator. If you go into Ohio, we got a lot of county organizers in Ohio, okay? We have Allen County, Brown County, Cahuga County, Clinton County. We've got Dallas County. Fairfield County, Franklin, Fulton, Hamilton, Jefferson, Montgomery. I mean, we've got lots of people here involved on the grassroots level, but they're kind of sleeping. We've constituted all 88 counties, and we have 254 members inside of Ohio. Okay, we need to get them up and moving back again. We need to get them going on the grassroots. We need to get them educating themselves by coming to our website, taking our education, coming to our Monday night programs, reading our paperwork, getting involved. We're writing a book right now, okay, writing 3 books. One book is a handbook for grand jurists. Another book is a handbook for the petit jury, okay, because they get 2 different powers. One is to trial, and one, of course, is, to indict. So we'll do 2. We may do one book with all the information in one. This is Pettit, this is Grand. And then we're doing another book. And these 3 books are being written all at the same time, in the sense, because as you pull the information, oh, this should go in this book, or this should go in all of the books. But once we do, we may consolidate it into one book, with the exception of the handbook for the jury administrators. Now, jury administrators, there's 4 of them, 4 for each county. It's a paid position, a very good salary. It's a career position. It's a rewarding type of a job, because you get to deal with problems on the grassroots level. You get to put the bureaucrats in their place. You get to bring them before the grand jury if they don't obey the law. We can remove them from office. There's all kinds of things we could do. The administrators is the investigative body for the grand jury, and the grand jury can become investigators themselves, and it's the administrators that paves the way, spearheads the way for them to be able to go into an office and open up drawers, have people step aside. Let's look into your file cabinets. I want to see what's going on your computer. What's going on here? I'm the boss. People need to think this way. If we don't think this way and act, okay, we'll never get this. The grand jury has huge amounts of power, okay? And if they refuse to open themselves up to us, we will remove them as quick as an eye blink. All you have to do is bring in the paperwork for a potential indictment, and if you can get the indictment, and I'm sure you will, okay, you get the indictment, and that person's out of a job. They're out of office. They got to worry about going to court. And don't think about getting some bar attorney that's hired by the state, because we won't stand for it. You're going to pay for your own attorney. We're not going to pay for your attorney. You see, look, the people need to do these things. This is powerful. And it could be a lot of fun. There's a lot of enjoyment by, you know, helping. Look at people. We have people whose children are being robbed from them. Their parents are robbed from them. Everything they've worked for their whole lives is robbed from them. Their children don't get it. They pull it into these courts and, what do they call that court? Probate court. Anybody who goes near a probate court is crazy. I mean, just go shoot yourself. Don't even bother going there, because you're just giving up what you're doing. Okay? So in any event, we can solve the problem, and people need to step up, take the jobs. There's a lot of it is volunteer, but there is the paid position on that level. And let's take back this nation. I'm tired of this. I'm tired of all these socialists trying to run my life. I'm tired of the tickets and the BS. You know, I got a car, I can't get inspected. By the way, Gerard, my car still won't read allowable to get me inspected, yet the lights aren't coming on either. I can't get an inspection sticker. I'm 8 months driving around with this car, and tickets are piling up, you know? And I'm not paying them. I'm not paying them. I'm going to fight them. I'm taking them to federal court for cause. I'm tired of it, you know? So anyway, we got to do what we got to do.
All right, let somebody else talk then. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Gerard, we lose you? Okay, there's the last caller there.
Is there anybody in there?
Yeah, that's the last caller coming up right now. Heather Lee, I think it is.
Yes, my question, John, is a very quick question. It's back to the silver. You seem to have quite a bit of knowledge about the silver, and I have a question about maybe I can pick your brain on how one would dispense of, like, the ingots or the bars of silver.
Look, at any silver is good, but what I'm trying to say is this. The cheapest silver you can buy is called junk silver. Junk silver is dimes, quarters, half dollars, and silver dollars, okay? The interesting thing about that is only 90%. And what's really interesting is if you take the Kennedy half dollar that came out after 1965, which was 40% silver, okay? And I forget where they cut them off. But in any event, you know, that is legal tender. Okay, made by the United States of America from the Treasury. It's legal tender.
Well,
it doesn't matter that it's 90%. No, that has the value of 100%. So they have to give you face value for the bang for that buck. So my saying is this. If you go out right now, you can buy an ounce of the you can buy a silver dollar. You can buy 10 silver dimes or 4 silver quarters, or $2.50 or any combination to make a dollar, okay, you could buy that for about $15.50, okay, for each dollar, okay? If you want to get a Morgan silver dollar or any kind of, you're looking more like the $20 to $24. Morgan's like $24 right now, somewhere around there,
right.
Last time I looked.
And
you
I
might
get
be able
that.
To get,
I get
might,
that. Yeah.
You might be able to get other silver dollars that's not necessarily a Morgan dollar that might get it for $22, okay? But the thing is this, it doesn't matter what you're paying for it. The cheaper one is as valuable as the more expensive one when the collapse comes and they move back to legal money. Because the law says that the bank has to give you the true value, the true face value. So you got 90%. In other words, I paid for 90% of the silver where someone got a silver round and they paid the the full 100% for that full 9.99 ounce, okay, or 0.99 ounce, however they put that out, 0.99 ounce, they paid the full 100%. I only paid 90%, and mine is just as valuable as theirs. Mine is just as powerful as this. I don't lose a penny. I get full face value because that's the law with legal tender.
Yes, and that, and I get that, John. My question is, I just found out that I just had, in 1995, I bought a lot of silver, okay, and they were ingots, all right, and around $20,000 worth, okay, and I just found out that they were all mischievously stolen. And so what I'm asking is, when someone turns in an ingot of silver, they would have to go to either a bank or a gold or silver exchange. Do they not have to sign and give identity in order to dispense with an ingot or a bar of silver?
Gerard might know better. Gerard might have that answer because he deals more with that than I did. I mean, I have bought mine and I've used ID. I've used my bank account, but I buy. I'm not selling, you see. But go ahead, Gerard.
Yeah, when you go and turn it in, any reputable dealer has to get your driver's license and fill the thing out because, look, at the state police are looking for that too. Like, if you report it stolen, the first thing they do is go to all those little silver dealers to see who turned in ingots. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's an outside chance they could find it outside very much. There's a dealer over here in Kingston, and he'll write you a check. And his bank is right down the road. I usually take it and cash it at his bank right away, immediately, to get mm-hmm. my cash out of it. You know what I mean?
Well, I do know who stole it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So and so I'm just trying to.
Do you think that they turned it in, or do you think they're holding on to it?
Well, either way, I know where they are, and I'm going to call the FBI.
You're in Michigan, right?
Yes.
Have you ever spoken or have you ever had a conversation or do you know about your sheriff? Do you have a good sheriff?
Oh, yeah. This is one of the sheriffs that came out against the governor.
Why don't you go down and talk to your sheriff before going to the FBI? Go talk to your sheriff. He's the guy that'll do. He's your constitutional law enforcer in your county. He's the guy who'll get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, Donald Trump's got to clean that FBI up, too.
Yeah, it still needs cleaning.
Your silver ingots out of the guy, you'll never see him.
Well, I didn't know if I should use the FBI or the state because it's a cross state line.
No, use your sheriff. If your sheriff can call the sheriff in another county, they can maybe deal with it that way, which I would think that they can. But if necessary, the sheriff may suggest the FBI if it's interstate and he needs to think that way.
He's still in control of the investigation, even if he calls the FBI.
That's right. You want the sheriff here. This is who you want. He's your constitutional protector.
Well, good, because I just called him and told him what a champion he was for standing up and going national. He was one of the four Michigan. I know he led the pack. I called him first.
So remind him of that when you call him up and then tell him your problem.
Yeah, well, he knows the problem anyway, and he's familiar with it. He already has complaints in his department on this person. So I guess I'm going to go to the sheriff. Thank you for that advice.
Yeah, the idea what Gerard said, you know, look, at there's local dealers all over the place. I'm sure they have a list that they can run through to see if they're around from the last X amount of time, last 2 months or whatever it's been, you know, has anybody traded in X amount of dollars or approximately that amount of whatever
If the guy's an experienced crook, if he's really a criminal, he's not going to do that. He's going to put an ad in the paper. He's going to sell it private is what he's going to do.
So is he an experienced crook or is he a junkie? Is he?
No, he's not experienced.
Okay. Is he just someone harder for money and maybe on drugs or anything of that nature?
Well, he broke into the house. He's an ex. And he broke into the house. And what he did is he took the boxes of silver that were hidden. He knew where they were, and he took them, and he formed...
Can you prove he broke into the house? Is there Is his fingerprints there? Was his fingerprints there before?
Yep, the sheriff has the complaint, and so does the court.
All right, well, that's the way you got to work it, then. That's the only way I can think of it, so.
Okay. Also, he taped the boxes. He made a concrete form to the boxes. He unloaded the boxes, put the concrete, the perfect form concrete into each box, and then he taped it. So the tape, you can't use gloves with tape, otherwise you stick to it. And it's that threaded tape, and he taped all the boxes up and put them right back perfectly where they were before, so I wouldn't notice. And if I picked any of them up, it felt like there was some, you know, weighted silver in them, because they're all sealed. And
so he left a lot of DNA there.
yeah, I'm thinking so. That's why I was going to call the FBI or the state police, because they have the labs, but.
Well, the sheriff has access.
The sheriff's got access, yeah.
Yeah, no, the sheriff can use that. And like I said, he may have sold them. He may have sold them privately, which you can do. And so I don't know what your recourse there is. And what he might not realize is, look at right now. If you go to buy silver, forget about the spot price. If the spot price says it's 15. You still can't buy it for less than 22 or something like that, because it's hard.
You could buy it for $15.50 roughly an ounce by buying junk silver, dimes, quarters, half dollars. Yeah, you'll see a whole bag. They'll show you a bag, $100 face value, and at $1,530, whatever it is.
I'll tell you what, you should scoff that up, because that's
absolutely.
Because they're going to even sell them at a premium. Because I think they can. I think they can mark them up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, look, they may be restricted a little bit because of the weight of the silver. They're not looking at it as face value of what it really is. That's why it's always been cheaper. Junk silver is the best deal in the world. Yeah. I'm telling you, you can't get anything better. And it's, look at, the ratio is 90 to 1, may even be 100 to 1. It's been a while since I even thought about it, but let's say it's 100 to 1.
It went up to 105
to 1. Its value should be 18 to 1.
Yeah, it was 105 to 1 like last month, John.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
and they say that silver may for a short period, because there's not that much around right now, for a short period of time, it may even go higher than the price of gold. So if you have all the silver, even the weight of the silver of the coins, and it goes to something, goes equal to gold for a while, I would trade all my silver in for gold at that point, ounce for ounce.
Right.
Now I just multiplied my money 20 more times. I mean, just think of the kind of money we're talking about on just $100 face value. That's a huge amount of money, But anyway, it's 12:30.
Yep. I think we beat that subject to death. Okay, anything
else? Yeah, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. All right, Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday, right?
Yep.
Let me shut the recording down.